We'll call the County Board of Supervisors meeting together June 8th. If we'd all rise for the flag salute.
With me, please, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started this morning, I'd like to call for a moment of silence just to recall, I think, a very great president, at least the oldest living president that we have, who passed away this last week, Ronald Reagan. If we could have a moment of silence, I would appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. And the gentleman accomplished quite a bit in his time period. All of us remembering him in different ways, and it was sad to see him go. With that, then, Madam Chair, Clerk.
I love that.
We'll get this day started. I've elevated both of you this last time. Anyway, I know.
We just
she's
have one.
Sitting over at the office, yeah.
She is.
She's not here. If you would read the amendment to the board.
We just have one amendment today. The board needs to adjourn this meeting to the County Government Center Board Chambers June 14, 2004 at 9 o'clock to conduct budget hearings. And those are the amendments for today.
Thank you. With that, then, we will go into public comment time period since we have no presentations this morning. Advise you that you have the opportunity to speak on any item not on the agenda and that you have 3 minutes to which to make that presentation. And we'll start off with Reverend C. Height. And then be followed by Robert Toth.
I'm Reverend C. Height. I provide outreach and advocacy in San Luis Obispo County and dedicate this advocacy to the underrepresented and disabled with unmet needs. Disabled and elder financial abuse is a growing crime, especially as baby boomers age. Cases doubled between 1999 and 2000 statewide, and it's underreported because of feelings of hopelessness and humiliation. Scandalous. Taking the competitive advantage, benefiting from the disadvantage and loss of those least able to defend themselves is deplorably human. We see evolutionary pressures at work as your message of profit and advantage filters down to the providers and contractors of this community. Next week, the board provides the example. I contend that the county would not be confiscating the roads of homeowners and allowing developers to build roads without notifying residents if they considered the following, that one or more of the disadvantaged constituents may be or associated with a protected class of people and have limitations in one or more daily life activity. One or more of these constituents may be elder or disabled and protected by the American with Disabilities Act, 504 Rehabilitation Act, and UNRU Civil Rights Act. I request the following accommodation for this community and as a person of disability. Prior to next week's June budget hearing, please have your county advisors, administrators, and county council review the significant law which is available downstairs in the county law library and report honestly to this board. Equitable decisions, responsive and responsible government is what we voted for. The accommodation and full enjoyment of one's home under fair employment and fair housing rights continues to be challenged in this county. According to DSS Manual of Policy and Procedures, home is the place an individual chooses to reside. In December of 2002, a disabled Christian man in a wheelchair came before this board to appear for more time in consideration of his fair housing rights and immediately lost those rights without any referral to county services. This produced an Olmsted report. As unsupported, he became a risk of restricted living should his health and resources fail. Where was consideration of your responsibility to illness and injury prevention as required of this board by public health code? Where were the referrals for local disabled advocacy to protect his independent living? Housing certificates that may include medical deduction relief for the disabled, motel vouchers, IH in-home supportive services, restaurant meal allowances through social services. This board then spoke of killing Christmas and undermined the ability of social services to function. I will bring you every example of the damage that befalls a disabled person when, as required to maintain their independent living, they attempt to protect their rights in San Luis Obispo County. Only in South Park may the disabled find equal opportunity for ridicule and humiliation.
Thank you. Robert Toth, followed by Michael Kovacs.
Good morning. I'm Robert Toth. I live here in San Luis Obispo. And I came here today to speak to you about IHS as our wage and benefits package. I would like to share with you a little bit about one of my clients. Her name is Ellen. If it hadn't been for this program, Ellen would be dead.
Can you pull that closer so we can hear you better?
Oh, sure. How's this? Very good. Ellen would be dead right now if it hadn't been for this program. She has probably 10 different debilitating diseases. At least half of those are terminal. And every day for her is a struggle. She requires me to dress her, sometimes to bathe her, to do her errands for her. We bring a quality of life to people who would otherwise be dead. That's what this program does. How are we going to be able to take care of these people if we can't take care of ourselves? We need a raise, folks, and we need to be able to get medical coverage in a way that it doesn't cost us or make us have to file bankruptcy just to survive. I appeal to your compassion. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Kovacs, followed by Tony Paradis.
Michael Kovacs, I take time off from my busy schedule. Since I have been retired, I am busier than ever, for fear of failing to agendize President Reagan this morning. I'm glad, Chairman Ovitt, that you did not forget about him. I think he was the greatest president in my lifetime, of this greatest nation ever existed, and the nation that adopted me for its citizen 48 years ago. Since you are watching the clock, this citizen can only mention a few items why I consider President Reagan the greatest to me, as well as to many, many, many who are respecting, paying respect throughout the nation for this man. Through his created national strength and his perseverance and charm, he forced the Soviet Politburo, not Ms. Comrade Gorbachev, because the Soviet Politburo forced Comrade Gorbachev down to its knees in 1989. And it was President Reagan who stopped the expanding global imperial communism right where it has started, in Moscow. Without a shot fired, half dozen countries, including my own fatherland, has been liberated from Soviet occupation of 35 years. Yes, that occupation ended along with the Cold War of 45 years. too many Americans, unfortunately, take this for granted. Yes, for granted. They are forgetting that there has been countless, numerous missiles loaded with strategic nuclear weapons aimed at us, United States only, for decades. Let's not take the 8 years of President Reagan. He did not mark time. He did for the public. He worked for us, and he delivered results because he thought there is only one proof of ability, and that's results. Thanking for my expressing my respect and support, he sent me this cap.
Thank you, Mr. Kovacs.
I have been wearing it. Why are you so rushing all the time, Chairman of it?
Mr. Kovacs, we set policy for everyone equal.
Your policy.
You. Tony Paradis, followed by Yvonne Ross.
Hi, my name is Tony Paradis. I'm from Atascadero. I'm here on behalf of the in-home care providers. I have my son with me, Matthew. I would like to stress and implore the board to take in consideration the need for the in-home services. My son graduated out of high school. He's graduated out of computer technology school. He's going to be working on a web page for the employment resources through the Department of Social Services. And I really feel that if he didn't have the push and the drive from the people that loved him at home with all his special needs, then he wouldn't be the hero that he is today. And I think that all of us have to realize that we're all going to get older someday. Even our own president that just died had Alzheimer's and needed to be taken care of. Somebody had to do it. And I would hope that somebody would care for me the same way that I care for my son or anybody else that I love or anybody else that would need the help. Unfortunately, there's not enough money. If anything were to happen to me, there's nobody to replace me. I have no insurance. Broke my arm a couple of years ago, and I still had to take care of him. Still had to do it with a cast. I appreciate you taking notice in this need and our drive. Thank you.
Thank you, Yvonne Ross. Followed by Jane Von Cole.
Good morning. My name is Yvonne Ross, and I am an IHSS worker, and I have been a worker for 3 years. And all I want to say is we need to put this issue to rest. You have heard our stories, and I have sent you letters of people that cannot be here because they need to care for their loved ones. Our stories are just utter despair. We need to have our wages and benefits. On July 22nd, after 3 years of putting 50 to 60 hours a week in, I now have to have surgery. On the 22nd, and I'm going to be in the hospital and out of work for 10 days. Now, nobody's going to be able to pay for it but me. Who knows? Without the IHSS workers helping me during this 10 days, I don't know if I can make it. I implore you, please understand that the work that we do is a profession, and we need, we need the money. We need the wages to compensate for what we do. We care. We love. We are compassionate. The state will match our wages. Now, Santa Barbara and Orange County also, they have their wages and their benefits. What's happening here in San Luis? I don't understand. We need our wages and benefits. And this is all we're asking is for a fair shot here. We work hard. We work very, very hard for our money. I was pushed for this operation. I have to go back. Even after 10 days, I have to go back with a cast on. I have cysts on my knees. I have carpal tunnel, and I have no insurance. but I still have to work and put a roof over my head, you know. And I think it's just injustice here. It's just total injustice that we are paid $6.95 an hour for the work that we do. Just please understand that we do need some help from you and some support. Please. Thank you very much. My name is Yvonne Ross. I am an IHSS worker.
Jane Von Coy, followed by Betty Parks.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. You've seen several people over and over again. Unfortunately, other people can't come, so I'm sort of talking for them as well. This morning, I was up at 6:15, which is too early for me, to get a young man to school in Los Osos. My primary job actually is being a nanny because I couldn't survive on just one job. I have two or three, four actually. The wages at $6.95 are ridiculous. I'm not sure if everybody saw the news yesterday, but in New York, they were picketing, and the domestic workers there were on strike. They get $7. Wow, it's a whole 5 cents more than we get. And they're asking for 10. I think she just mentioned that Santa Barbara came in with $8 recently, and $34 a month, medical, dental, and optical. That's a hell of a lot more than we have, excuse the phrase. But it doesn't seem fair that we work this hard. I talked to at least 50 people on the phone trying to get them to come and support us, and they support us, but they can't come. One gentleman takes care of his elderly aunt, and he said he would substitute his brother next week and turn up. Another lady said she could come if she could find someone for her children to go to school. And this is how it goes on. Other people have been sick. One lady took a full-time job because she was just helping her neighbor, and she couldn't afford to have any more clients through IHSS. So those of us who want to work in one of the worst paid programs that there is finally give up because we can't support ourselves. And that's really sad. I think it would be interesting if maybe we all picketed in this county and came to the courthouse with our little board saying we needed some money. But we would appreciate the fact that you come back to the bargaining table and at least do something about this contract, because this is really ridiculous. Nobody can survive on that kind of pay and put a roof over their head and feel good about it. And if you want people to work in this field, you have to give them some incentive. I think that's all today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Betty Parks, followed by Lori Heitzer.
Hi, my name's Betty Parks, and I've been working for IHSS for about 2 years now. I started with my husband. He's legally blind, and he's had a few things really happened to him. He had an aneurysm, and so after that he had a stroke when they went in and did some things for him at UCLA. And he started to get better enough to where I needed to work because we couldn't afford what we were living on his income. And so I think the reason why I really reached out to others is because I had such compassion and love for the elderly and the ones that are really in need. And so I have four clients that really need me just about every day. And it's hard. It's hard to go out there and do all this for the pay that we are receiving and to compensate for what we, you know, get. So I just want to plead with you, just if nothing else, just to look inside of yourselves, knowing that what would happen if you needed help? Could you really afford for so many years to without us? You wouldn't. You couldn't do it without us. And so we not only need your compassion and love for us, but someday you might need ours. So just put us in the position that you would want to be put in if you did this or if you needed this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Laurie Heitzer, followed by Thelma Smith.
Hello, my name is Laurie Heitzer, and I am an IHSS worker. And President Reagan was the very first president I got to vote for. And the summer previous to that, I worked as a wheat truck driver on my summer break before I graduated from high school. And believe it or not, I made more than I do now. And but what I wanted to talk about today was how many hours per week my provider is allowed. She's allowed 10 hours per week. And we had a crisis last Thanksgiving, which happens from time to time, and she got an infection. And I had already put in 5 hours that week, and I worked 2 days a week, 5 hours per day, and I worked Mondays and Thursdays. And I had a cold that week, and I had already put in 5 hours on Monday, so we had decided I was going to work on Friday. Well, Thanksgiving Day, she was in the hospital. And so I had to go and pick her up from the ER. That took 2 hours. And then the next day, I had to put in my regular 5 hours, plus we had to go to the ER because they had put IV shunt in her, heparin lock, so she could get IV antibiotics. That was another 2 hours on top of my 5 hours. Saturday, we had to go back to the ER. That was another 3 hours. Sunday was another 3 hours at the ER to have the heparin lock, have more antibiotics. Monday was my regular 5 hours. On Tuesday was 2 hours back at the ER. And then Friday was another my regular 5 hours. So all total, in 2 weeks, I put in 30 hours when I was only authorized 20. Now, there's no way for me to get that extra 10 hours worth of pay. There is no holiday pay. There is no overtime pay. And there's no way for me to call in sick. This whole time, I'm exposing her to a cold. She already has a life-threatening infection. I can't call anybody. She only has one caretaker. So I can't call anybody and say, hey, cover for me. I have a cold. So this whole time I'm taking her to the ER when she has a life-threatening infection already and exposing her to my cold. And now the really bad thing is my son's graduating and I'm leaving on Wednesday for a week. We've done everything we can to prepare. But if an emergency arises, there's no one for her to call for 7 days while I'm gone. And she gets panicky in these situations. When I'm even gone to the dentist in Santa Barbara for a day, she gets panicky because these emergencies arise.
Thank you.
Yeah. And
Thelma Smith, followed by Julie Adams.
Yeah, hello, my name's Thelma Smith, and Lori's...
Pull it all the way up to her. That mic needs to go all the way up. Or use the other one. That's fine.
They don't reach.
Lori's my caregiver, and as she said, when she goes to Santa Barbara, I go with her because I'm afraid to be alone. And one day, my electric chair, my reclining chair, it kind of broke, and I called her in the middle of the night because I was stuck in my chair, and I had no way to get out of it. And I called her in the middle of the night, and I said, Lori, what do I do? My chair, I can't get out of it. And she just told me, call your neighbor. And I was scared. I didn't know what to do. And my roof leaked. I didn't know what to do. I called her. I just, whenever, no matter what goes wrong, I just call her. I don't know what to do. So what do I do if I don't have her? I have no idea what I would do if I didn't have her. So if she doesn't have a raise, I don't know what I'll do if I don't have her. I just don't know what I'll do.
Thank you.
Please help them out, please.
Thank you
very much.
Julie Adams, followed by Eric Greening.
My name is Julie Adams. I'm from Atascadero. I've been in home health care and nursing for 31 years. I just came off of a 14-hour shift. My husband died 3 months ago. My father died a year and a half ago. It really boggles me to see how little we've come in 31 years, not only to take care of the medical needed people in our local, state, and federal counties across the United States, but the caregivers are completely forgotten, although you come on television, you state through the news, we're well needed. We need medical workers. We need home health care workers. We need nurses. But how little we have forgotten, how little we've come in 31 years. And, you know, I'm really not that amazed. And it is now time to stop, give attention, and have a fair and adequate resolution and listen to all these people, because you can't wait 30 more years. And then stop and think, one day you, what will you do when you need us? Because you will need us. And then you have to say, what am I going to do? It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Consider that. If you don't listen to anything else, one day ask yourself, what am I going to do? In an instant, your life will change. Trust me, mine has. It has. I have no benefits. I have no vacation pay. If I get ill, I have no one to take care of me. I have these people. And trust me, they'll be here for me. I know that. Do you? Thank you.
Eric Greening, followed by Michael Passarelli.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and I know that next week you're going to be having budget hearings Monday and Tuesday, and you're going to be recognizing people who save lives in this county and protect lives and paying them fairly. We honor our firefighters. You'll be making sure that they have what they need. They save countless lives. Our sheriff's deputies, the people in environmental health who protect the food in our restaurants and the water we drink. In every department, there are life-saving functions, and you're going to make sure that those people have what they need. The question I would ask you right now as you go into the budget cycle is, how many of those life-saving positions in our county government do you think you could fill if you offered $6.95 an hour, no benefits, no travel pay? How many of those firefighter positions would go empty at $6.95 an hour? How many sheriff's deputy positions would be empty at $6.95 an hour? These people here save lives too. There are people alive in this county today because of the work these people do. And it's time for you, in a different process, but a parallel process, because this involves negotiating with the state. It's not within your own budget, but it is within your purview. It is within your control. If Santa Barbara County can do it, there's no reason why we can't. And the time to respond is now, because these people have been back week after week after week. They're waiting for an answer. Let us know how you're going to respond, when you're going to respond, and we will back you every way we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Passarelli.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Michael Passarelli. I'm from Grover Beach, and today I'll be speaking in my capacity as president of the Board of Directors of the Food Bank Coalition. Wanted to give you all a report on the kickoff to what we're hoping is the Summer of the Solution to Hunger here in San Luis Obispo County with the Rally for Hunger that was in Santa Rosa Park on Thursday. I want to say thank you very much to Cacho for showing up. Peg, you know, last year you made a very impassioned speech. Adrian did an outstanding job filling in for you this year, so please thank Adrian for us. Also, Betsy Almhofer and Chris Rammer from Mabel Maldonado coming down speaking, as well as Sam Blakesley stopping by. There were over 100 people skipped a meal that day. raising over $700. It's a start. thanks to Charter Communications and Sloco Data, we now have all our forms, the Skip a Meal forms. We have a blue one for the general public, a gray one for businesses, and a green one because the telethon for hunger will be June 24th on Charter Communications Public Access, and where people will be singing to help end hunger in the county. Our goal at this point is to get as many people as possible to skip one meal. I'm going to be particularly ambitious. I want 100% of the county to take just a minute to think about the fact that each and every one of us skipped just one meal this year, donated the cost to the Food Bank Coalition. Hunger could be effectively handled. There's only one other county in the state of California that can currently boast that. We could be the second by the end of this year. Katja, you mentioned you really appreciated the efforts that we all made getting the grant from the Guadalupe Air Mitigation Funds and making the Oceano Warehouse. We have open discussions to make that a permanent building, to buy, get a site, and build a permanent building in Oceano, just starting the initial discussions. That's down the road, but that's one of the building blocks. And that's why we're asking people to just skip one meal this year, just one meal. As a man much wiser than I will ever be once said, some men see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they can be and ask each of you, what are we, a bunch of idiots? This is doable. If enough of us care to skip one meal this year, hunger can be effectively handled. So please, just think about that. And the website, slofoodbank.org, is up so you can do it online. And the phone number is 238-4664. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Anybody else wishing to speak on public comment? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment period and we'll go into our consent calendar. This is the opportunity for...
Can we say something before some of these people leave?
Ms. Bernard.
Okay. Because we've had a great deal of education with all of your presence every week for the past few weeks. And I think I'm speaking for the board as well as myself. We've heard what you've said, and we've certainly understood the plight that the domestic health care workers have. Now, our role in this, and we begin to be able to do it next week, is the smallest part of what your work is. This is really a state issue. We only have a minor role because the funding generally comes from the state. Kind of like taking a Chevy to a Ford dealer and asking them to fix it. You're going to have to do the same kind of effort at the state level. With the fallout of this budget, it has fallen on all of the counties to try to make up what the state has mishandled. Now, there have been comments at the state level, public ones, which I'm sure you're aware of, that the minimum wage is fine. I don't think any of us agree. So our part we can do next week. But the 80% part is from the state. And if you and all of the other people who are in the same situation put that same energy, that same ability to make your point at the state level, they need to feel what you're going through and the kinds of stories that you've shared with us. Otherwise, all we can deliver is 20%, which isn't going to get you where you need to go. 20% of whatever that raise would be is not going to get you where you need to go. And so there are elected officials who are in charge of state budgets. There are people there who have made public statements that need to be challenged. And I hope you do that same energy with them. Here is where you can be so much more directly felt and heard. But they have the budget. This is what they take care of. And we need to be able to respond to you. So I don't want you to feel that we're not hearing you. Because everybody out here is. If we could give you everything you wanted right now, it would be a done deal. And it would have been a month ago when you first came here, or even years ago when you first raised the issue. But this is a state program for funding these things. You need to be able to be heard and be effective at the state level and not let them get away with what they have been doing. And that is saying that minimum wage is fine, because they wouldn't live with it, and as the points were made here, neither would any of the other positions in the county live with it. You are critical to what happens in our society. Please don't ever feel that you're not appreciated. And we certainly understand as we get older, we need it. We could need it tomorrow. And thank God for your love and your care and your health that you're willing to do it. at the level that you have been doing it. The comment about making more when you graduate from high school. You make more right now going to McDonald's, flipping hamburgers. And there's not one of us who don't want you there when our parents, our relatives, or even ourselves need that kind of help. So please feel that you are very much appreciated. You're very much respected for what you do. I dare say most of us wouldn't even have the ability, the patience, or the perseverance to do what you do. So thank you, and help us help you by making sure that you are heard at the state level. Okay? All right.
Thank you. With that, we will go into the consent calendar. Consent calendar. This will be the opportunity for the public to speak on any item on the consent calendar. Again, I would request that you fill out the yellow request to speak form, and you're allowed 3 minutes to make the presentation. Excuse me, folks, we do have some business continuing. With that, we'll start with Reverend C. Height. And that'd be followed by Eric Greening.
I am Reverend C. Hyde. B9 request for approve a budget adjustment in the amount of $750,000 from general fund contingencies to advance startup costs incurred by community health care centers of the Central Coast CHC. Did someone underestimate the great savings this county was going to make by privatizing and monopolizing public health care in Slo County? Did someone underestimate the county's urgent need to turn General Hospital into an inpatient psychiatric unit? If you build it, they will come. B13, request to approve a contract with Santa Barbara County to provide inpatient psychiatric services to Santa Barbara patients in San Luis Obispo County Psychiatric Health Facility. Is General Hospital the new tourist attraction, the Vagabond Hotel? Was there not enough distressed, disenfranchised people in this county at the end of their rope, oppressed and depressed by the public health care, human services, affordable and public housing crisis? Is this board approving a platform for above-ground nuclear storage while reducing public health opportunities so you may profit from confinement? You have eliminated a pediatric clinic, adult clinic at FCC, and your community hospital. Your disadvantaged and disabled have reduced opportunity and lost their choice in public health care so you may provide substandard services to Santa Barbara County. You have no grounds at General Hospital. The disabled with mental illness have less opportunity to experience the light of day than offenders, violent offenders. You're cutting the very community-based services that would allow these patients to move into less restricted living. By the year 1999, the United States Supreme Court spoke to the issue of self-determination and worthiness of all persons in their choice of independent living. Implementation of the Olmstead Plan guarantees that services would not be withheld from any individual to create a failure that would lead to the confinement of that person. Services in San Luis Obispo County are routinely withheld from select citizens, placing an undue burden of potential failure on a protected class of people. Your budget decisions will jeopardize persons of age, at-risk youth, and increased opportunity for disability and confinement. The basis of discrimination against select families and their children was openly stated during official reporting in the 2003 Slo County budget hearings. There was a negative reference to children no longer confined by the County of San Luis Obispo, who are now openly stigmatized. When mental health requests funding, they prey on bigotry and fear, stating references to Columbine. The prediction for negative outcome is routinely and unjustly enforced against family and children, which include the disabled. The lack of hope and the lack of positive and effective service referrals supports an industry more profitable than tourism in this county, which is failure and confinement. Again, I ask you, do you really want to base your economy on the suffering of others?
Thank you. Eric Greening, followed by Michael Kovacs.
I am Eric Greening on item B3, which sets a June 22nd hearing on the coming fiscal year's growth management ordinance. What I find baffling is the decoupling of this hearing from the consideration of the resource management levels of severity that should always precede the setting of growth rates. This is particularly bothersome in relation to Nipomo because last month the Water Resources Advisory Committee recommended that you move to a level of severity 3 for water supply in this area. The staff report contains no hint of this recommendation and bases the coming year's growth rates on RMS findings from last December 9th. On page 15, letter C, it states, quote, the RMS report concerning the Nipomo Mesa area will be considered by the Board of Supervisors at an advertised hearing in the fall of 2004, unquote. My questions are, one, why are your growth management actions allowed to get out of phase with the RMS findings on which they are based? Two, why wasn't the Water Resources Advisory Committee recommendation, which we thought timely for swift consideration, included in this packet? And three, can it be included in the packet for June 22nd, along with a rethinking of the staff recommendation for Nipomo based on that recommendation? Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Kovacs.
Yes, I'm Michael Kovacs from District Number 5, Atascadero. B9, your honorable board approved 3 months ago a contract with an outside vendor contingent upon the pre-approval by the state and federal government who would be, I repeat, would be paying it. For 3 months, this approval did not arrive. And Dr. Edge, our fiscal chief officer or whatever, said, he's quoting the vendor, it will be received soon. So he is recommending, if not instructing your board, to pay the $750,000 out of the San Luis Obispo people's pocket, out of our monies, $750,000, contingent upon state and federal government approval. In light of the fiscal crisis in our state, this approval may not come entirely for the amount of those millions that you already approved. What if the approval not be granted? Harry Ovid, are you going to pay that money out of your $2 million you carved out of our pocket, from the people's pocket, during the 4 or 5 terms of yours? Are you going to pay for those on a disapproved amount? This is not a prudent and wise fiscal management for the public in San Luis Obispo. In my 15 years coming here, I never seen a single instant when your board disapproved anything staff put under your nose. Why, having these consent agenda items agendized? Why? Why, if you have approved everything prior to this board meeting? Well, President Reagan was right in this statement, in his statement as well. Expect no solutions for the problem from the government. Government is the problem. And this is nowhere as true as it is here in this county government.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on public comment? And on that last item, I think I just received information someplace that we did receive those approvals, and I can't recall where I saw that. Yeah. So we have received those approvals, Mr. Kovacs.
Actually, the good news is we got word from the Department of Health Services, or actually the Community Health Centers did on Friday, that the final licenses were approved and the clinics will be transferred to the Community Health Centers on June 18th, a week from Friday. The item before you is just to advance what the board already approved for startup funding, principally for automation equipment. There are also some vans. You know, we're going to be providing free transportation, or CHC is going to be providing free transportation to any patient with an appointment. So they're also buying a couple of new vans to provide for that service. And this is money that is going to be reduced from next year's budget to compensate for the fact that we're going to be advancing it to them now.
Mr. Reggie, did you have anything else to say?
Yeah, just I did want to add, as Gail referenced, and the people commenting on this from the audience missed, that this actually, rather than dragging things out, this actually reversed. This is an item that has moved more quickly and expeditiously than we had anticipated. We budgeted, and your board had approved for next year, is $750,000 in startup costs, but it has moved so quickly, mainly due to the good work on Gail's part, working with the clinic staff, that they're in a position to begin their operation this month, and therefore this proposal is not to find an additional $750,000, but simply to provide the $750,000 this year. And as noted in your item, it will reduce the next year's budget in the proposed budget. We're recommending in the supplemental document a reduction of $750,000 to reflect that change.
Okay.
Question?
Yeah, Ms. Bernard.
Just on what Gail just said, you had mentioned that part of the new expenses was to buy vans to provide transportation. Am I understanding it correctly?
They're going to buy one or two more vans. Right now they provide free transportation to any patient with an appointment. So now they're going to be operating the clinics, the additional clinics in San Luis, the ones that we have been operating.
How does this fit with RIDON, our whole system where we provide, especially with federal dollars, the same service, or it sounds like the same service?
They go to the more remote sites, is my understanding, and I can get specific site locations.
They meaning?
Community health centers. They will go and pick up the patients where they live if they have an appointment.
Yeah,
RIDON's are very limited.
Yeah, it's within a half mile of the actual route, I think it is. That's what I remember.
Well, that's what the law is, but actually they've been doing farther.
Yeah, RIDON does as much as it can, but it has a limited service because of its limited resources and budget. This would be a specific, for example, for the Paso Clinic, it could send a van to Chandon and provide specifically for Chandon patients to get to Paso, which currently is a major hole in that service provision.
Great, thanks.
Okay. With that, Ms. Bernard, do you have any other items on the consent
calendar? Yes, B16, please, and also a question on B14.
Okay, Mr. Sajjan?
No, thank you.
Mr. Ryan?
No.
I have none. What's your question on B14, then?
The other equipment, and this is a question for Gail, I guess. We had testimony early on about the equipment at General Hospital and how different organizations were possibly needing that, and since it was purchased with public funds before we put it up for sale, are you aware, or are you in dialogue on any of that? I was thinking there's birthing equipment. And
actually, I haven't seen the item. General Services put it on the agenda, so maybe Dwayne could address the item.
Mr. Edge, you had something on that, or was it too late left?
The item on
B9. Might as well stay there since item B16 is also mentioned.
Could you restate your question one more time? It's my understanding, I'm Dwayne Live, General Services Director. It's my understanding this list is like leftovers. It's been pretty well picked over. The medical community has been offered, our medical services have taken stuff out of it, and we've got leftovers.
Okay, when you say the medical, you said medical community, and then you said medical services?
Well, in the county, we didn't offer it to outside, but I think the autoclave was taken out of this, and I don't know the specifics. There's 86 pages of surplus items they took a year to inventory to put into this particular document in front of you, and I think all the let's call it the good stuff, has been taken out already.
All right, so other aspects of the county where we provide stuff have already been able to out of there. And then we did have people initially come and ask, I think it was especially with some of the birthing equipment for birthing centers. Have they been contacted? Is there anything there that they – I'm sure that we're not selling something that
the
public domain should have stayed in the public domain.
I don't know. We couldn't do it before your board surplused it anyway. It is our intention to offer this as one lot rather than holding an auction on all these 86 pages of individual items. So a person will buy this as one lot and then resell it. I don't know specifically about the items that you're referring to.
And Mr. Ryan?
Yeah, just reading your staff report here, it refers to the attached list of hospital equipment miscellaneous surplus items. And there is no attached list. And then in the discussion, it refers to the attached list reflects remainder of hospital equipment. And there is no. I don't know if anyone else.
No, it's
in the clerk's file.
Yeah, there are 86 okay. pages of it.
Right. It's quite lengthy. That's why we put it in the clerk's file.
You used to put them in here.
Yeah.
Well, we could put it, but this one item takes up most of my package here this morning.
Yeah. But it did say clerk's file, so it is.
Right.
Yeah. I'd still like to follow up on one thing. Once it gets into a single lot in setting, then we've taken it really out of the range of most of our local nonprofits to be able to access it. There's no way they're going to access 86 pages of items. But we bought a lot of that stuff with our own public funds and for the public's use. I would really like some effort to be made to make that list available to people in our community who provide these services and see if we can link up in some way to give them some access to this before it goes into such a lot that none of them have access anymore.
I don't know that it hasn't already been done in some form. And from general services standpoint, we were given an inventory of the property up there by the Camden Group, and this is what's left over. Some of it may have already been distributed. I really don't know. I'm going to defer to Gail Wilcox.
As I think the staff report does mention that for county departments it had an interest in the equipment that they did give. But right now, as far as I know, we do have at least with French Hospital, they have some of the OB equipment, the tables, and I think we also have some equipment at Sierra Vista. But we can check into it. Again, I haven't seen the list.
Would you contact some of the obvious public groups, nonprofit groups who deal with this and see if there's something there that they would need? And then I'm fine with surplusing it. I would just like to make sure that we don't take something out of our area that really belongs here and then start charging people back in order to be able to get some simple item.
Yes, I think we can do that, and we have an opportunity to do that once your board surpluses it. We haven't offered it for sale yet, so we can still pull things out of it.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you for taking the extra step.
All right. Item B16 is surplus sale property, so you might as well stay there.
Yeah. I have I have some questions on this. If we could put up the map, please, of where it is, the public will know what we're talking about. B16, page 4.
Going to need some help with it. I'm not sure how to set this thing up.
Your general services.
Not this. This is IT.
Is it documents? Okay. We'll have to pull out the map.
I can rest assure you right now that lot is on an unbuildable area. There is no capability of building on that lot, if that's the question you're asking.
It's what I'd like to pursue. Yeah. Because the public may need it.
Mr. Edge, your light's blinking.
I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, while we're prepping that, if you like, I just wanted to reference there was some public comment on item B9, which is the, on B13, which was the potential for contracting with Santa Barbara.
Oh, yeah.
Some suggestions made that somehow we're shortchanging people. Actually, I think if you read this item, you see it's the reverse, that our folk have been doing an effective job of minimizing, and the goal, as you know, is to minimize the stay of mental health patients in institutions, in this case an inpatient institution, and the early intervention programs that Dr. Wolf's department has been pursuing for a number of years have been effective enough in generating the capability of being able to respond to a request from Santa Barbara County to set aside a couple of beds for their patients. They have a facility in Santa Barbara City. It's advantageous to them if they can have a San Luis location for their North County patients. So we actually see this as a win-win, and I want to emphasize that this is in no way a reflection of shortchanging San Luis Obispo County mental health patients. In fact, it's a reflection of good work on the part of the mental health therapists in reducing the number of days of hospitalization needed by mental health patients.
Thank you. We're set up now, Mr. Loeb. Ms. Pinard, your question?
Yeah. I was a little concerned. The adjacent property owner owns an acre, which I assume he purchased at some point. I mean, it says here there's a one-acre parcel that is owned by the adjacent property owner. Right. So he purchased that on the open market?
Evidently, I'm not sure how he acquired that.
Well, there was
that.
An appraisal, so there must be some background on what purchases were made in the adjoining areas.
The appraisal came from the assessor for particular parcel this morning.
Okay, so from the assessor, not from a real estate appraisal.
No.
And yet we're dealing with taxpayer issues here. So what I'm concerned about is the issue here is that there's an acre of land that the county owns, and we're considering it, surplusing it, and selling it for $15,000, and yet there's an adjoining parcel of an acre that somebody purchased. I dare say if they put their acre on the market right now, it would be worth a lot more than $15,000. So I'm having a real hard time understanding why we would do this. So could you take me through whatever sounds so illogical?
I'm going to let Karen Madalena take you through it, our property manager.
Basically, I wanted to clarify, too, that when we have these lots appraised, we do use the state-certified appraisers that are through our assessor's office. So they are fully qualified to be able to assess these parcels. The parcel that we are intending to sell today, it's a one-acre piece. This is not being sold as a buildable lot. This is being sold to the adjacent property owner as part of our surplus and sale policy. This owner is required to merge his parcel with the adjoining parcel. And this works to limit the residential density out in that area. And it is part of what we're working with the planning department. It improves the situation that's regarding the substandard parcel size by consolidating the two pieces. So it's not actually considered a buildable lot.
Well, I noticed in all the dialogue it says not buildable at this time. Now, you pulled this. Could you take us back to a little bit bigger picture here? Because it is confusing as to what the surrounding okay, that's not B16, page 4. If you could put that up. All right, there we go. And then there's the lot that is, that's fine. All right, so people will see that. All right, what are the zonings immediately around it? I mean, we know the one person has a one-acre parcel, so one-acre parcels are allowed.
This is in an agricultural area.
And how big are the surrounding parcels?
A lot of the parcels are 1 acre. The minimum parcel size to build is a 20-acre minimum size.
When we have a bunch of one-acre parcel properties, what is the logical, I mean, how far is this from town? And if everything around it is 1 acre, we'd like to have 20 acres, and I understand that. If you let me finish, please. But the reality is there's a lot of pressure to build on the 1 acre parcels, and if they're legal lots then they have that right to do that. So if these were all huge agricultural areas, that would make sense that you are now trying to. This isn't like combining a 40-acre parcel with a 40-acre parcel. These are all in one-acre areas, and yet we
have a similar situation out in the California
Valley. Let me point out something here to get this straight up. First of all, this is an agricultural subdivision that was done in the 20s. It was 1 acre. It was done for investment. All these lots are certified, or they are legal lots. It's what we refer to as antiquated subdivision. In this particular area, this particular lot is an unbuildable lot. These were lots that were laid out over a map. And I think if you put up that other one that you had, you will take a look at the topography on this situation. You cannot build on this, nor can there be the road, I think, which is Reindeer Place, can access that. So what we are doing is, I think we probably received that property back because of tax default that nobody could build
That's
on it. They just let it go.
This, yeah.
It's surplus, and in our rules, and we've gone through this before, we appraise it, we go to the neighbor, we say, would you like to buy it? And they're saying yes, and this is what the value is, and they must merge it. But if you look just at the topography where that's at, and I can attest because I've been on both sides of that thing, it is an unbuildable area. So it does not have any value other than just the raw land.
Well, it would be helpful to see why it is so unbuildable, because as I drive up and down the coast, I see people building on lots that are like cliff dwellings. So again, we have our primary responsibility is a fiduciary relationship to the public, and I see that as very similar to a lot of the other parcels that are around there, and I'm very concerned that it is a legal lot in a legal subdivision. I'm not sure how that relates to being an antiquated anything other than it was done a long time ago. You've consistently used the word that it is a legal-sized lot. So I am concerned that expects us to be able to get the fair market value for it. And certainly if it went on the market and no one bought it, then that would determine that. But right now I just can't imagine an acre of land in an area where it's a legal lot not being buildable when I see everything else that's going here. It says it has access to water and can drill a well, and everything says development at this time. So that's not consistent
for
me.
Yeah,
when
you look at a legal parcel and you look at buildable and you look at the topography on the map up there, and you have to have a distance between your well and your septic, and you have to have a building site, and then you have to have percolation, and there's a number of other things that you have to have. And on a one-acre site, you can lose a lot of ground real fast and not be able to build there to make all those criteria that the county requires. And that's what you have in this one here. And we do this all the time, and it says in reading the backup that adjacent property owners, not just this one, had been consulted to see if they wanted. It's been in a 30-day public review. As far as the appraisal, you have a comment up here that the property has been independently appraised, and that's by our appraiser, and then reviewed by the State Board of Equalization appraisers?
No, actually, we contract with the assessor's office. They are state-certified appraisers. They're third-party neutral. We want this to be arm's length. We don't actually do the appraisal through Real Property Services. We ask the assessor's office to assist us with that part of the process.
And then is that reviewed by the State Board of Equalization?
They are State Board certified
appraisers.
So it is
it's one and the same. The way it reads here, it sounds like, too, you do an independent appraisal,
right,
and reviewed by a State Board of Equalization.
Correct. And that's through the assessor's office.
Okay.
And then they send that back over to us, and we take a look at it also.
Yeah, and then when you take the value of an unbuildable parcel is nowhere near the value of a parcel that you could actually build on. So I could see having the much lower value. And you look in that area out there, and there you say it's an agricultural area, and it's not an agricultural area. It's zoned agricultural, but it is actually rural home sites and more of an what are you going to call suburban? Rural suburban is what the area is, more actually than agricultural.
Okay.
And so even though it's zoned agriculture, if you went out and looked at it, you would see rural suburban as the type of building you see in that area.
If I might, then I just want to understand. Sure. You said that everything is independent, and yet the independent is within our own county organization. In other words, it went from your office to the assessor's office. It didn't go to another board to be reviewed. If I'm understanding what you said correctly, you said that these appraisers are state certified. That's not to say that this issue went to another state agency and got approval at that level. Is that right?
Not that I know of. And right. again, the assessor's office would be able to answer that specific detail. What my understanding is that the appraisers through the assessor's office are certified through the state board to be able to appraise. And they are independent of us, and that's why we use them.
Right. And I appreciate your explanation. What I still have issue with is the fact that, and I appreciate Mike's clarification that this is basically rural suburban. There's a lot of homes out here. I have yet to see an unbuildable lot when you have a whole acre to deal with. I like I said, I've seen all of the, there's one that's on a cliff down in Pismo. It was an engineering marvel, okay? And it has all the ability within the acre. We've seen people find ways to get septic and whatnot on a 25-foot lot in Los Osos. So this is an acre of parcel. I won't belabor the issue. It will just put it to the vote. I would like this held for separate vote, however. I believe that on today's market, we would have gotten more than 15,000 back. Wish I'd known about it, but there's nothing that has been selling for an acre of land in an area where people are building homes that says that this is that big of a problem, and I certainly would have liked to have seen what it would have done on the public market. We have people here earlier saying we would like some help with minimum wage, so every extent that we can get a little bit more funding into the public coffers here to be able to do that, I think we should have pursued.
Mr. Ryan.
And this is certainly one that was would have been very marketable, I think.
Hang on, Larry. I'm going to go next. The other thing that the county is gaining out of this is we're taking, you see a number of the parcels, if you go back to that other map, are 2.5-acre parcels out there, and there's a handful of 1-acre parcels. This parcel, when it's purchased, will be combined with the other parcel to make one buildable parcel, and only one unit will be allowed on those two parcels. So we're decreasing some of that density, and we're also stopping the need to build a cliffhanger out in the middle of nowhere just to try to make a parcel work. So I believe what we're doing here is exactly what our policy says, and I think the staff has followed the policy to get where they are.
This has followed our general rules and policies because we've done it before, I think, out in the same area. We had a lot out
That's
here.
Correct.
We've gone through the appraisal process. We did discuss the fact of the
we
value.
We would never be surplusing and selling this as a standalone buildable lot. That's contrary to
And it has been on the open market because it came up for tax surplus sale, which was on the open market. So
Nobody
if somebody wanted to buy it, they could have bought it at that point.
Yeah, and I will show you lots out there that are unbuildable. The ones you speak of do have sewer and water available to them. They do not have to put their own sewer and water in. So, Larry, with that, Larry, did you have something?
Mr. Chairman, let me explain some of that. The Regional Water Quality Control Board Basin Plan has...
You want to give us your name so we know
Larry
who you're
Kelly,
really
are. Senior Planner, Department of Planning and Building. The Regional Water Quality Control Board Basin Plan has a 1-acre minimum parcel size for well and septic tank. They also have a 100-foot separation on both sides of a creek. If you note here, this is a draw creek running through the property, so there's a 100-foot separation on both sides of that creek for septic systems. The other thing is this lot is only 100 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the lot by itself, then it's not buildable. Added to the adjacent lot, there's ability to be able to make that separation and allow the owner, the buyer, to have a building site on the 2-acre lot. Mm-hmm. These lots were 2 acres initially when they were subdivided in the 20s. They've been split by deeds into 1-acre parcels.
Okay.
So because of the narrow width of the lot of 100 feet.
And we'll probably see more of these out there because in that particular canyon there is a considerable amount of them that are not they're not buildable. I'm going to go one last one, Ms. Bernard, one last one, Mr. Ryan, and we're going to go to
the vote. And then we will lay this to rest because it does come down just to a simple vote. Think about it, though. You're talking about where there are a lot of other homes, so you're talking about trying to not have sprawl, which is one of our goals as the county. We had a discussion here not too long ago about the incredible need for housing, and it seems so unusual then to say this is only a 100-foot lot. We've done a lot more and a lot less. The setback where you just showed where the draw was, means that that 100-foot lot is very long to be an acre, so there is a lot of other area that wouldn't infringe on that 100-foot setback or whatever the setback was that you had just said. So I'm just going to put it out there. We say we want housing. We say we want a compact form, and yet we're saying here everything exactly the opposite. So I can't support it. We just like it for several.
Yeah, you know, if that lot was as flat as that piece of paper that they drew the lines on, you know, your argument would have some weight, but it isn't, so your argument doesn't have much weight. Move approval of the consent agenda minus B16.
Moved by Mr. Ryan. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Asajian. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Move B16. Approval?
Second.
Moved by Ryan. Seconded by Asajian. Roll call.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Excuse me.
Wait a second. Let me get...
It's a comment about this motion. There are three recommendations on the agenda. The first recommendation regards the resolution. The second is a budget adjustment requiring a 4/5 vote. And the third is approval of the mitigated negative declaration. So you might want to make a motion in two parts.
Well, let's run the motion and see. Then we can divide it up.
So the motion is for everything on B16. Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
No.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, what point Jim is trying to make is the second part of that, which is
the
budget adjustment.
I got that. We can go back there and change the motion. And I'll move that. Which one are we on there?
You don't need...
One and three?
You actually don't have a 1 and 3. It's all one paragraph.
The thing to do would be to make a motion to adopt the resolution and approve the mitigated negative declaration and then have a separate motion on the budget adjustment, which is number 2. And I'm looking at page B16-2 under recommendation. There are three paragraphs. And so I've characterized those as 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. So I would make a motion that we approve the first paragraph of the recommendation.
And the third paragraph.
Are we withdrawing the first motion?
It's failed.
Failed.
Okay.
And the difference is?
Oh, it did have. Okay. Got it.
It's vote only applies.
There's
funds. I move the first and third paragraph of the recommendation.
The motion is to move first and third paragraph on B16-2. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved by Mr. Ryan, seconded by Mr. Asajian. Since the resolution, all those roll call.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
No.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye. Now.
Okay, now I move the second paragraph of the recommendation.
And this is to then move the budget appropriation of the funds that we receive from this from the to the transfer to the countywide building renovation.
With the separate from the approval because we've already approved the sale.
Okay. Do I have a motion by Mr. Ryan? Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Asajian. Roll call vote.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
And just for the record, there were two separate issues. One was just to allow you to move the money now that you've already made the sale.
Thank you. With that, then, we are now going to item C1.
Weave through the maze, and you can make it.
Madam Clerk, item C1.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider formation of Track 2530 Assessment District for Drainage Basin Maintenance.
I assume, Mr. Marshall, with your name plate and all, that you are presenting.
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I hope to be so brief that I don't even need to sit at one of the staff desks. This item began before your board on April 20th, and you gave us direction to send notices and ballots for formation of an assessment district for drainage basin maintenance. Today is the required public hearing. People can present testimony and or submit ballots if they haven't already, and we'll go count the ballots and report back in 2 weeks. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, then we'll open to the public. Does anyone wish to speak on the ballot issue? Seeing none, then we'll close it. And if there's no recommendation,
we'll move. That's recommendation 1, 2, 3, 4 items.
Moved by Mr. Asajian, seconded by Mr. Ryan. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
Thank you.
You're counting. Yeah, why don't we go ahead and take we'll take a break, and we will come back at about 20:30 after the hour.
30 after the hour.
Yeah. 30.
Item C2 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Jeff Meyer and Jennifer Meyer Fleming of the Subdivision Review Board's approval of their request for two conditional certificates of compliance for two illegally subdivided parcels located off Lynn Road, approximately 1,500 feet east of Stanton Street in the South County Island planning area. The recommendation is for denial of the appeal and approved conditional certificates of compliance.
Great. Mr. Stevenson.
Thank you, Chairman Olbert, members of the board. Chuck Stevenson, County Planning. Erica Bumgardner is going to do the presentation in just a moment, but I wanted to just mention that we have a couple other people in the audience who are here on this project from our department who might be able to answer questions if you need that. John Ufrat is the chairman of the Subdivision Review Board and is here, and Larry Kelly, who has done deed research and title research on this project and works on our certificates of compliance, is also here, and he can answer questions. So with that, I will just turn it over to Erica.
Thank you. Good morning, Erica Bumgardner, County Planning. Before I begin the presentation on the project, I just want to give a brief overview of the conditional certificate of compliance process, when we apply the conditional certificate as opposed to a straight certificate, and how we derive those conditions. A certificate of compliance application is filed with the county to determine whether a parcel was created by a legal method and complies with the provisions of the Subdivision Map Act and the Real Property Division Ordinance. If it is determined that the parcel is not legally created, the county will issue a certificate of compliance or conditional certificate of compliance for the parcel. A conditional certificate of compliance is issued as opposed to a straight or regular certificate if the parcel was subdivided illegally after a time that would have required them to be in accordance with the land use ordinance at the time the State Subdivision Map Act was in effect. As the name suggests, a conditional certificate of compliance allows the county to impose conditions that must be met prior to recording of the certificate in order to bring the parcel into compliance with the applicable provisions of the Subdivision Map Act and the Real Property Division Ordinance, which would have normally been required if the project had been legally subdivided. This becomes more complex if the project is already substandard in size than would have normally been allowed in a particular land use category. In those types of cases, the county would look at other potential alternative mitigation measures to reduce impacts to surrounding properties. An example of this might be limiting the number of units, future units allowed on a particular parcel, or if the applicant happens to own adjacent contiguous parcels, we would require them to merge to bring the parcel up to the minimum parcel size or through lot line adjustment or re-subdivision. If the applicant is the original subdivider of the division, which was not in compliance, conditions may be imposed, which would be applicable to a current division of the property. If the applicant is a subsequent purchaser of the illegal division, conditions may be imposed which would have been applicable at the time the applicant acquired his or her interest in the property. The subject parcels were illegally subdivided in 1975 by deed conveyance without the approval and recording of a parcel map or final tract map, which was a violation of the county's Lot Division Ordinance and Subdivision Map Act. The applicant was not the original subdivider of the two illegal parcels as he acquired his interest in the property in 2001. Therefore, he's subject to the subdivision standards in effect in 2001. Now, the project is an appeal by the applicants of the Subdivision Review Board's approval of their request for two conditional certificates of compliance for two illegally subdivided parcels of 1.5 and 3.5 acres each. The project is located on Lynn Road, east of Stanton Street in the community of Napomo in the South County Inland Planning Area, and is located in the residential rural land use category. Here we have an aerial view of the project site. See Lynn Road, then the applicant's driveway coming off of Lynn Road to the north, the 1.5-acre parcel, and the 3.5-acre parcel, which does include this driveway. And here we have a closer view of the two parcels. Because the parcels are both substandard in size, again, planning staff looked at alternative ways to reduce potential impacts to neighboring properties. If and when these parcels are annexed into the community, into the Napomo Community Services District for community water, each parcel owner will be allowed to develop a primary residence and possibly secondary residence if a pending general plan amendment proposing to lift current restrictions prohibiting secondary dwellings is approved. Requiring each of the two 1.5 and 3.5-acre parcels to be enlarged through merger, lot line adjustment, or resubdivision to meet the minimum parcel size of 5 acres will protect the current allowable density in this rural area. If the parcels are not enlarged to 5 acres and remain two separate parcels, the number of potential residential units allowed in this area would increase from 2 to 4 on a 5-acre parcel, which is more than would be allowed on any other parcels in the area. Furthermore, the access driveway to the subject property runs adjacent a property to the west. Here we have the driveway. Driveway currently serves this property to the north. A residence here will potentially serve this property when a residence is built, as they're prohibited access off of Lynn Road. And if these remain, if these parcels remain two separate parcels, it could potentially serve 4 more additional residents for a total of 6 residents, causing a potential nuisance impact to this neighboring parcel. It is staff's recommendation that the applicant merge the two parcels to create the minimum 5-acre parcel size, which would require only 1 conditional certificate of compliance. However, the condition allows for some flexibility if the applicant wishes to adjust the lot line with a cooperative neighbor or resubdivide the surrounding parcels to obtain the 5-acre minimum, resubdivide with surrounding parcels. If your board decides to reverse the decision of the Subdivision Review Board, however, it is planning staff's recommendation that you require the parcels to be brought up to a 2.5-acre minimum through a lot line adjustment and also limit the number of potential dwellings to 1 dwelling per parcel. The parcel just south of the subject parcel was also part of the same illegal subdivision and went to the Subdivision Review Board at the same time that this project went. It was approved for 1 conditional certificate of compliance. It's a 2.5-acre parcel and restricted to 1 future residence. That applicant did not own any adjacent properties. And with that, planning staff recommends that you adopt the resolution affirming the decision of the Subdivision Review Board and approve the conditional certificates of compliance based on the findings in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Judge. Mr. Ryan, questions? Now I'll come back to Mr. Sajjan.
With your picture back there and talking about the one in front, the one you have right there now, you approved that at 2.5. But it was illegally subdivided also.
That is correct.
And Subdivision Review approved that. And so what the person in back is guilty of is owning 2 pieces of property. And so if the person in back just simply deeded one of those APNs to somebody else, then they would have 2 pieces of property, and then you would look at those in a totally different manner. Is that correct?
Chuck Stevenson, I think we don't view it quite that way. I think that's certainly one perspective, but there was another extenuating circumstance for the parcel in front. The one on the right, if Erica can point it out with her pointer, was issued a building permit, and so by law we were required to issue a certificate on that. There were 2 different owners. The parcels were created illegally. These owners own both parcels, unfortunately, I guess. But they do own both, and this is a reasonable way to correct the situation and bring them as a 5-acre parcel.
But if they were sent in looking for certificates of compliance with 2 separate owners, you wouldn't have the ability to ask for a merger.
That's correct.
Mr. Sajjan, did you have some?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same or similar questions. If the owner of this parcel, just because they own the both parcels, we're holding that against them, or just because of our policies, if he or she was able to sell, then it's a done deal. Now, when they purchased the two parcels, which we say it was illegally subdivided, and I know you did a good job explaining it. I'm going to have you do it one more time. As if it was illegal, why was it allowed to be subdivided? What did happen at that time that today we consider it illegal?
Are you saying what was the zoning at the time that it was created?
What was today we call it illegally subdivided, but at one time it got subdivided. Mm-hmm. What was in place at that time that the legality didn't stop it from being subdivided?
If I could hop in there on that same question, yeah. It was supposedly subdivided illegally using a court partition. Could you explain how the court partition works?
Yes, and there is some complication with that. And I'll ask Larry Kelly to talk about the court partition portion.
And as Mr. Kelly comes forward, if there is a court partition, isn't that a higher authority that?
A court partition cannot create a parcel that does not comply with the general plan. It's illegal for that to happen. So you can't rely on a court partition to comply with the general plan zoning. Even though they did it. But that was it.
2 points. Mr. Chairman, Larry Kelly, Senior Planner with the County Department of Planning and Building. 2 points. In 1966, in an appeals court case, Pratt versus Adams, the appeals court ruled that court petitions can't be used to get around the Subdivision Map Act and local ordinances and zoning regulations. The actual code at civil procedures at the time also had a section that reads, it's 872.040, compliance with property laws. Nothing in this title excuses compliance with the applicable laws, regulations, or ordinance governing the division, sale, or transfer of property. Now, sometime later than this time, there was actual prohibition put in the Code of Civil Procedures that said that court petitions cannot divide property, although it had this provision that said doesn't excuse the compliance with the law concerning those creation of parcels. At the time this division occurred, the area was zoned A1 2.5. And so it had a 2.5-acre minimum parcel size. So for one thing, one of these parcels actually violated zoning even in the 70s when they divided it. At the time, it would have required a parcel map. We would have been putting in roads, road improvements. The parcel would have all met those requirements. And by violating the laws, we didn't get road improvements. We didn't get parcels that comply even with the zoning at the time, which was 2.5. The zoning now is 5 acres, of course. Did that answer the questions?
I think the biggest issue on that one is that the court did not violate the law because at the time it was a 2.5-acre minimum.
No, they did because they made that one.
Well, no, the court.
I'm sorry, they did, but the balance of it was 2.5 acres.
Well, technically how it works, the people can still go to court to have a court petition. They would have to then go back to the local jurisdiction to get that approved. If they could not, they'd have to go back to court and have the judge work out a different alternative configuration.
Yeah, it's an interesting fact, and I did meet with the appellant here that it got recorded, not by them, but it did get recorded. And we do have the capabilities today to put separate APNs without getting them recorded. But
correct.
And I think I've asked her to make presence of that. Why we have a recorded map on this thing,
Mr. Chairman? The other thing too is a court partition didn't create these two parcels. It created the two parcels in the front and it created one parcel at the back. The legal description was faulty. Because when they were trying to describe their property, they left out part of the property, and the owner came back at a later date, 2 years later, and said, I found an extra piece that was left out because of a faulty legal description and created the fourth parcel or the second parcel on this application.
And so, yet the new owner was able to purchase those two pieces as separate pieces, correct?
Well, he purchased them thinking they were two. There were two APNs on it, but they weren't.
Wouldn't through title... insurance and corrections from assessor's office, wouldn't that go through a process and clarify all this?
Well, I'm not sure on the title search.
Supervisor Estasian, title companies will have an exclusion from their title policies. They do not guarantee compliance with local laws such as zoning or subdivision regulations. So when they issue title to the policy, they're only a title of the property. They're only guaranteeing that you're the sole owner of the property. They're not guaranteeing that those lots are legal.
Yeah, I think we have evidence that was given to us by Mr. Kuhl, and in there is a grant deed, and the grant deed basically describes parcel 1 and parcel 2 as lot 37 and lot 31. So, I mean, I'm sorry. Anyway, it does describe them as two separate units. And I think this big discussion is going to go on because even our own assessor's map shows separate parcels. So, anyway, is there any other questions?
A question, I'm going to go to the applicant when they come up, but was there any willingness to make it compatible to the neighboring properties to go to 2.5 acres? Was that discussion?
Are you asking did the neighbors
indicate the property owner, was there a willingness to go to 2.5 acres rather than keep it as is and be out of compliance?
They probably would. They could answer that, though.
Was that offered to them in subdivision review? No.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. No other questions? At this time, then, I would ask either Meyer Fleming or a representative come forward and present their position as the appellant.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Fleming. I am the applicant's daughter. I guess when the judgment of partition was actually in 1973 was when they went through and it was recorded with the county assessors in 1973. I did speak with the assessor and they did record it through the judgment of partition, and regarding the 1.5 acre parcel, it was issued an APN number. He said that even though it wasn't legally described, it was still there. And so therefore it was issued an APN number. It wasn't like it was in 1976 when the legal description, 1975, excuse me, the legal description for the 1.5 acre parcel was put in. It had already had its APN number. They just went back and did a grant deed for the legal description. And I guess the main reason why we purchased this is my grandfather owns the property that is adjacent to our 5 acres and purchased this 5 acres as affordable housing for both my brother and I. And I am aware of the Pratt versus Adams case from 1964, and you have copies of the actual recording of that case and Stephen Kuhl's view on it. The two main differences between our case and the Pratt versus Adams case is there were 12 entities that purchased into that property, and they retained an attorney and began a partition act, and it was assumed that from the beginning of their purchase, they used the judgment of partition to go through and do a subdivision. In our case, there was 3 families, which were all related, that just wanted to purchase a piece of land in a rural area. And there's no indication that the 3 parties had the intention of subdividing smaller and selling off the pieces, which, in fact, the front 2 owners are the original owners. Our main concern is that the front parcel was awarded a certificate of compliance on 2.5 acres, and we are just asking that we be given the same treatment and are allowed the consistency that the front 2 parcels have.
Is there a willingness on your side to do a lot line adjustment so each will become 2.5 acres?
We are willing to make them 2.5 acres. In fact, in April of last year, we sent a letter regarding going through the process that we would be willing to do a rewritten deed or record of survey while in the process of our certificates of compliance to equalize our parcels. And in fact, you, the Board of Supervisors, are approved into the Summit Station Water for the Napomo Community Service District. However, we cannot get our water until we have a certificate of compliance. So that is the one thing holding us up. And regarding our the flag lot, the driveway, we are giving the Napomo Community Service District a 20-foot road easement and a 10-foot easement for the water line to come down to service an adjacent landowner.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Any other questions? Seeing none, you can stick around because you have an opportunity. You'll have an opportunity to come back and rebut this. We have a request to speak for him, Jesse Hill.
Thank you, Jesse Hill, 1910 Grant Avenue. One of the things that concerns me about this it was something that was just related to by the applicant, which was, you know, we've just done, or your board has just signed a memorandum of understanding with the NCSD. And as part of this application, the NCSD is going to be potentially annexing this. And the MOU, I've only got the old one, but I'm fairly sure that since I was sitting with the president of the NCSD yesterday, they haven't received a referral on this. And the MOU that was signed and went to LAFCO less than, I don't know what, two, 3 weeks ago, part of those provisions set out that these projects will be referred to the NCSD. We never received this at the NCAC for review, approval, or comment. Obviously, if the subdivision review decision stands, then it's going to be exempt from CEQA. If it is changed and we're suddenly talking about 2.5 acres, I think that is a fairly significant potential change under CEQA. I think you're going to have gentry problems. But back to the NCSD, and as part of the local planning that was, proposed for them, I'll just read you number 3 of the old Exhibit A that was, I don't know, the ink was just dry 3 weeks ago on this. The district and the county shall work cooperatively regarding but not limited to the following issues for areas within the Napomo Hydrologic Subarea and Napomo Valley shown in Exhibit C. Planning for land use, provision of public services, utilities, road right-of-way, traffic circulation, ag and open space, preservation, and general plan amendments. Each jurisdiction shall refer proposals, applicants, action related to the above issues to others for review and comment prior to taking action on the proposal or project. Information about the project shall be referred immediately to the following. I don't believe this was done. NCSD, I mean, I know that it was supposed to be referred, but we haven't seen it through either the NCAC or the NCSD. It might be better for TDCs. We haven't, really thought it through. But I think that if you're going to go to 2.5 in rural residential out there by deed, I don't think that's going to get you to the exemptions from CEQA that's proposed as part of this. I think that's clearly violation of general plan provisions. So what to do, I don't know. I guess I sort of, I feel sorry for these folks in some ways. I guess 2.5 acres with limits of one unit per might be the solution. I think going beyond that's gonna really, I don't know if you can go beyond that anyway on an exemption. So.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public wish to present on this? Seeing none, I bring it back to the board. Mr. Ryan.
On the 2.5 that was approved, conditional, what were the conditions?
Yeah, they were just limited to one future residence, no secondary dwellings, that they receive access off of the driveway, prohibited from Lynn, and then the standard conditions that are in this Meyer one as well.
Okay, so
those were the two.
What, one residence and then access off the driveway that goes back into those other two parcels or other three
right,
parcels.
Right, rather than Lynn Road.
Okay. I would...
Could you...
Just give me Mr. Massage.
Go ahead. But when you get there, I would support the lot line adjustment to 2.5 acre parcels because the guilt here that I see is they brought it in under one name. They could be just like the person up front who got their conditional certificate because he didn't own two parcels, and he had the one parcel. He was not required to merge with the two parcels in the back because he was less than 5 acres. And the only reason that you can require or try to require to have these merged is because you have the same ownership. They could withdraw this thing, put it under two ownerships, come back in, and go, we have two legal parcels. Then, of course, at that point, you'll go, well, you knew they were illegal parcels when you bought them. But, you know, that's what I'm seeing is the only difference here. And then if we go to the mistakes that the county may have made along the line, when we issued a building permit on the first 2.5 acre parcel without a certificate, and you're saying, so that basically gave it a certificate, and then the second one we gave a certificate in basically default, and then we're finally catching up, and we're going, yeah, two of them got by, but we're not going to let this last one get by. I think we're sort of behind in the game, and I don't know if we can actually hold the public hostage to that.
Mr. Chairman, if I can, I wanted to correct or respond to a comment from the public from Jesse Hill on the referral. We did check in the file, and it indicates that the certificate was referred to both the NCSD and to NCAC. It was sent to them.
Okay.
Question. That was in March of 2001.
I'm sorry.
2001 what?
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, please.
No. That was it.
What was the year?
March
26,
2001.
Quite a while ago.
The
2003. That's been a long time. We've been working.
That's why I was trying to get that. I was trying to get the year.
Okay.
I got the month.
Okay. Question and a motion. If I may ask the staff, the first and the second that we issued permits to build, was it conditioned per one unit per lot?
For the parcel just south, not the one that already has the straight conditional right. that we issued a building permit on, but the one that we did issue a conditional certificate for one future residence.
Mr. Chair, I want to make a motion that we do a conditional lot line adjustments of 2.5 acres each with one unit per 2.5 acres.
I would second that. Second. Is there road improvements that are required by doing that type of a lot line adjustment?
She wants to revive.
While you're doing that, I'm going to allow Ms. Meyer. Was it Meyer?
Larry Kelly will respond.
I'm sorry. If she had the right to rebut on that, so
I do. The driveway is paved. My grandfather has an easement from the previous owners, so it is paved and maintained by us. It's 20-foot easement, which is maintained by us. But regarding I just totally blanked out. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
But the excess easement that you're willing to give to NCSD, that is
the 20-foot road easement and an additional 10-foot for the pipeline.
And if you ever go through your project, want to build, I'm sure fire department has a say, CDF would.
Yes.
The road improvements and all that at that time.
Which they are, what we were given in the staff report right now, they are met to the current CDF standards.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else you want to?
Regarding the units right now with being annexed into the water district, we are limited to one, and we are just asking for that nothing is imposed on us that would not be otherwise allowable to our surrounding neighbors.
Okay. I want to go back. Yeah, I want to go back. Repeat the motion. Is that it's to uphold the appeal to allow for conditional certificate compliance on our two lots.
Partial uphold.
Partial uphold.
Yeah, because we're adding conditions.
Fine. I don't have a problem. Anyway.
Yeah. Is that
okay,
better?
Partial uphold, and what it is that it's a conditional
lot line.
It's a conditional certificates will be issued with the conditions that the lot line adjustments must provide for 2.5-acre lots, and I presume that's net because the road and everything is going to be part of this thing, and that one unit per lot would be allowed. And there are some other conditions that will be on it. But okay, Mr. Ryan on the motion?
Does the condition already, or does the motion need to address the road maintenance agreement between the parties?
Would that?
Conditions 3 and 4 address those points.
You're already okay.
To answer an earlier question, there's also a road standard for trail, an attached trail corridor to the county's A1X standard along the street frontage of Lynn Road, extending from eastern to western property lines of all real property contiguous with the roadway. So there's that little portion across the flag.
Yeah. That would be all right.
Then, condition 2 then is changing from 5 acres to 2.5. Is that correct? And then deleting the lead in?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Right.
We're satisfied?
Madam Clerk, are we clear on the motion?
All right. Roll call then.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye. Okay, with that, we'll go to item D1. Madam Clerk.
Item D1 is a consideration of a land use ordinance amendment G030014W Schuland C3JLP to delete a Salinas River area plan standard that restricts minimum parcel size to 10 acres on 4 parcels within a 43.8-acre site in the residential rural land use category first district. This item was continued from May 25, 2004.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren Hove, Department of Planning and Building. This was continued from your prior meeting to allow appropriate notification of the applicant. We're now prepared to have your board consider this request, and I'll remind your board and the audience that this is a consideration of whether to authorize this general plan amendment for processing. It's not the actual hearing on adoption of the general plan amendment. If your board does authorize it for processing, then it'll go through a process of staff review, preparation of environmental determination, and then come back for a planning commission hearing for a recommendation to your board, and then a formal hearing before your board that will be noticed. James Lope, senior planner, will present this item.
Can I get one clarification? This is a planning area standard.
Correct.
So there is a different process. It's
a little bit different process in that a planning area standard is now part of the land use ordinance. And we call it a general plan amendment for the sake of convenience. But the real significance is that it's not limited. A land use ordinance amendment is not limited to the 4 times per year state limit on general plan amendments. However, we tend to batch land use ordinance amendments and general plan amendment cycles anyway, so it may be a fine point, but you're correct on that.
Thank you. I just want to clarify. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Lopes in Department of Planning and Building. Just to summarize this project for you, the application concerns a 43.8-acre property located just west of the Templeton Urban Reserve line on the north side of Vineyard Drive. The site is adjacent to the agriculture land use category on its north and west, where parcel sizes are generally similar or larger as the site. The residential rural category on the property was established in 1986 with the current limitation upon the application of the current applicant. Inside the Templeton Urban Reserve line, the residential suburban category is east of the site and the public facility category is to the south. 4 10-acre parcels have been recorded by the applicant and the site has been used for dry farming. Development has progressed in adjacent land use categories to the east and to the south, as you can see with the subdivision to the south, a clustered land division that was enabled by amendments in 1996 during the Salinas River Area Plan update. The concern that staff has with the application is the same as with the original 1986 amendment, whether it will create a precedent for a new land use trend affecting agriculture category land to the west and north. A second concern is an issue is whether the inventory of residential rural land around Templeton is adequate at this time. And third, is the request consistent with general plan policies for amendments in this area? An analysis of these issues has shown that general plan policies are for low-density rural uses in general, with higher-density residential uses to be within urban areas. Second, the current limitation provides a large lot transition to agriculture land from the urban area, which was the intent of the original application, or approval of that application. The request for similar amendments on the north side of the property was declined in the Salinas River Area Plan update, and the Templeton Area Advisory Group supports the current 10-acre minimum. As well, there is an inventory of residential rural land that's adequate within the area around Templeton to the north, east, and south. The options that we're presenting to you today are to consider not authorizing processing the request or authorize processing the application as it's proposed to consider a standard 5-acre density and lot sizes, or authorize processing the application to consider the request and alternatives for clustering the allowed density, consolidating and aligning access points, and possible transfer of development credits. With the policies and physical conditions regarding the application, staff recommends that the board not authorize processing the amendment based on a potential for conflict with neighboring and nearby agricultural uses, a precedent for similar requests in the agriculture category in the vicinity, and inconsistencies with the general plan policies to maintain rural character. That concludes staff report. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have.
Is there any questions? I'll wait till afterwards, and then we're going to go to the applicant at this time.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jamie Kirk representing the applicants this morning. And I prepared a quick PowerPoint for you to run through with some photos and some other items. As Jim said, we are looking at amending the zoning ordinance to remove planning area standards that apply to this property. This property is zoned residential rural and has the planning area standard for 10-acre minimum parcel sizes. The site is surrounded to the east by residential suburban properties with parcel sizes ranging from about 1 acre to up to 10 acres, but directly bordering the properties that those parcels are between 1 and 2.5 acres. To the south, the project is bordered by residential suburban with the Vineyards development. They've got 1/4 acre to 1/2 acre lots, cluster development with the cluster open space parcel being to the south of the property. And then further to the southwest, public facilities, there's the Templeton, I believe it's the elementary school located in that location. And then, as Jim mentioned, located to the west and the north, the property is under ag land use designation, and it currently looks like possibly if any ag operation is happening out there right now, it's probably dry farm on a portion of one of the parcels. The site consists of between 10 and 11 acre parcels. There is an existing 200-foot ag buffer that's located that borders the agricultural properties, and that is proposed to remain. We're not requesting to remove that whatsoever. And then also on the last slide, you can see, I don't know if you can see it, between the four parcels, there is a common access easement that would provide access that currently is recorded to provide access to the current four lots. Provided a couple photos. This property is taken from the southeast property corner, and the next photo is taken directly across the street, and it's a little jagged. I tried to get a panoramic view for you of the entire property. This is taken across the street from the Vineyards, what would be considered the park parcel. And the next pictures were taken. This is looking down Vineyard Drive. I want you to look at the top photo, the trees that are located there. That's about the location of the existing access easement, so that in itself is somewhat troublesome because it does come out right on that corner as you're bending up from the school. And you can see the lower picture, not as clear. It's taken east looking towards 101 back towards the Vineyards development. The future development options with removing the planning area standard What it would ultimately result in would be an additional four lots. We've got four lots now, and if looking at future subdivision, we'd likely total be able to get eight lots. Reading the staff report, option three that planning staff came up with, I think that we're actually amenable to that option. It's something that we were considering in the first place was cluster division because it seemed appropriate for the area. We looked at cluster development. That would give, within the residential rural category, a 60% open space parcel, and that would just basically increase the ag buffer from 13.5 acres to 26 acres, thereby doubling it, and that would provide additional separation between the neighboring ag properties than what it exists today. And then also looking at the cluster division, it would give the ability to relocate that easement, the access easement, from what I consider not to be the best location. And you can see the arrow, it looks at locating it. And whenever I was standing out there, the prime location would be across the street from the road that they're showing that from the park parcel, so we can have a good intersection there. Additionally, one of the staff recommendations on option three was requiring purchase of TDCs for the additional lots. We aren't opposed to that, and that would, again, preserve in perpetuity other productive ag properties out in the true rural areas. I'd like to respond to a couple of the staff report findings. Before I forget, I'd like to respond to one of the items that Jim mentioned, that there is adequate inventory of residential rural properties in the Templeton area. And I don't know if he's necessarily meaning vacant or developed rural residential rural parcels, but I think that there possibly is a need in the Templeton area for residential rural properties at 2.5 to 5 acres, actually. One of the staff report findings is that the proposed amendment could affect the ag lands to the west and the north. The project, as we're proposing, looking at cluster division, we're not proposing to remove the 200-foot ag buffer, and clustering development would increase the separation between the uses. Second finding that was included in there was that the large lot transition to other agricultural properties, that's what this project site was maintaining. And again, with the buffer and the open space easement, it will provide a transition between the agricultural properties and the residential properties. Staff report also stated that this project would introduce 5-acre parcels on the north side of Vineyard Drive, thereby extending the residential character of the suburban area to the west edge of the elementary school property. 5 acres and smaller already exist on the north side of Vineyard Drive, and the smaller parcels would actually not extend all the way down to the school property. They would be looked at, and we'd look at putting them closer to that existing residential development that would be consistent with the cluster division. And then the final item, that TAG did not support the proposed amendment, and they were okay with the existing planning area standard. What happened at the TAG meeting was that their concerns were directly related to the access. Their concerns were the access with the school, the corner, where the access was going to be located. And so that's one of the ideas that we thought of, that we could fix the existing situation and then look at moving the access drive. So I think that looking at that was in direct response to TAG's comments. And that, at this point, that concludes my presentation, and we're requesting today that the board authorize processing of the general plan amendment for this property. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions.
Any questions? Thank you. With that, is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back. If I might, to refresh everybody's memory, the Salinas general plan was about 10 years now since we've looked at it. Okay.
Just about eight years.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pushing it, you know. I think this concept that you had, number three, with the TDCs and the cluster, does one thing that was not mentioned here today, and what it does is it actually sets an open space that locks in the deterrent from further development, because it does make that open space area, and it is similar to what we did with the Giabini property across the way, where we did the cluster, they bought the TDCs, and we left open space properties to protect actually the creek and Paso Robles, the linear area. So if there's no other comment,
I'll make a motion.
I would entertain a motion that we allow for the processing for.
Can make some
Yeah, I guess I could, but I just thought I'd see if I get
it.
I'm just trying something different. All right, and the motion would be to allow for processing of this land use ordinance amendment to the Salinas plan, and that the property would be using both TDC and the cluster as part of the consideration. And then I don't know if we need any more than that.
That's fine.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, is that option three that you're referring
yeah,
to?
Yeah, I think it's option three, and by going through the processing, TAG's going to get it back. There's some issues about locations. All that kind of stuff is going to be dealt with on that.
Okay.
But I think the two primary things here that actually meet with the Salinas plan objectives is that open space area that does basically set that rural boundary. Okay.
Second.
I have a motion by Harry and seconded by Sajjan. Can't say hope it. I don't know how to do that. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll have a voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Okay, with that then, we will go into closed session. I do have one request to speak on items on the closed session. I think we're going to have to clear the desk for a second.
Tammy
we need to.
That's so we just pulled a speaker.
Just if
her.
You can pull that over to her, yeah. This is on closed session items.
I'm Reverend C. Height, public advocate reporting on significant exposure. I have diligently created a public record over the last 6 years and watched my county and country behave in a frighteningly omnipotent manner. I believe we ally ourselves with truth or deception and that wrong is compounded daily. It is a false county assessment that the disabled are, quote, carrying out normal activities and protecting their rights. You are significantly exposed, County of San Luis Obispo, for repeated violations of the Fair Employment and Fair Housing and Andrew Civil Rights Act. I am requesting in my citizen's complaint that your administrative advisors and county council review this legal information which is available downstairs in your county law library, as well as the 504 Rehabilitation Act and Americans with Disabilities Act. Please clarify your advisements to the county partners, providers, and this Board of Supervisors after this review and prior to next week's budget hearings. I believe it is reasonable to say the county providers are following this county government's public promotion of profit at the expense of the disabled and disadvantaged. Example, to be sure we're on the same page, Dr. Edge, have you received the copy of the assessment on the sewer project at 1029 Monterey Avenue in Morro Bay?
Yes, we have it.
You have it? Okay. Mm-hmm. This sewer project included the trenching and reconnection to the city sewer with noted safety concerns. I believe it is reasonable to say the county was negligently wrong in its assessments that there was a sewer problem at this address prior to the easement permit granted by the city. This property has been under agreement with the California Coastal Commission, yet sought no permit for maintenance or improvements in a 10-year period. The county employee statements that there was no sewer problem, we just complain, were rumor provided to our advocate, Sarah Crest, which was not meant to find its way into my public health record. Dr. Namark established this advocacy to facilitate cooperation with my family's health and educational goals. On May 24, 2001, the county used a method to accomplish failure, which is separate the vulnerable and disabled from their advocates. The statement that we as disabled people just make a lot of complaints that there was no sewer problem points to a history on the part of the county to ignore requests for accommodation and a willingness to disparage qualified applicants to deny them services essential to their independent living. As of December 22, 2003, your disreputable Department of Social Services is identified by the state of California exclusively and without exception as the county. Your county attorneys have defended the behaviors of the very employees who have engaged in home wrecking. I've presented this public record from the city of Morro Bay to each and every county representative here today. Are you approachable? May the disabled approach their county government in the matter of belligerence to the provision of services, or will you direct your attorneys and staff to crush
Thank
this
you.
Claimant? Thank you.
With that, we will go to closed session, and from there we'll recess for lunch and be back at 2 o'clock. Well,
it never comes up again in life.
I'd like to start the afternoon's meeting in order. First of all, we'll have a report out of closed session. Mr. Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board met in closed session this morning concerning the items which were listed on the agenda. The board took no final action in closed session. Therefore, no public report is required. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, then, we'll go into our afternoon sessions. First item, D2.
Item D2 is consideration of a general plan and land use ordinance and land use element amendment application G030010M King Ventures to amend the land use ordinance Nacimiento planning area standards to address various improvement and development requirements for the Heritage Ranch Village area first district.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. Again, as the item immediately before lunch, this is not an official hearing to adopt the general plan amendment and land use ordinance amendment. It is instead consideration of whether to authorize it for processing. And once again, Jim Lopes, senior planner, will present the item.
Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This application proposes a substantial package of amendments to the Nacimiento Area Plan and Land Use Ordinance Planning Area Standards for Nacimiento. To start with an overview, I'd like to just go through some maps. Heritage Ranch is a planned community located at the east end of Lake Nacimiento, 7 miles northwest of Paso Robles. Most development is located west of Nacimiento Lake Drive with a single access point at Gateway Drive. The village area land use categories are located in corridors that are separated by open space or recreation zoning, shown here in green and blue. The core commercial area in the lower left-hand portion of the slide is near multifamily zoning and a marina to the northwest. The applicant, King Ventures, proposes three changes in land use categories, first being recreation to residential suburban on 60 acres. The second is open space to residential suburban on 12 acres. And the third is recreation and open space to residential single family on 23 acres. The open space proposals to go from open space to suburban and single family are involved with open space areas that are open space parcels that were recorded with subdivisions that need to be addressed as if they may have deed restrictions and so on. Looking at the terrain and the vegetation in these areas, the proposals for residential suburban are located in oak woodlands, on rolling hills, on each side of the future Heritage Loop Road in an undeveloped area. And the proposal for residential single family also is in an open grassland and oak woodland as part of an open space parcel between two subdivisions. Looking at the amendments that are proposed to area plan standards, I'll just highlight some of those for you. The applicant proposes to allow private street commitments rather than being required to dedicate streets to the county, to allow more structures in the open space areas, to set boat storage, horse paddock, and trail requirements for subdivisions, allow independent owners associations separate from the Heritage Ranch Owners Association. Require 50% of Quimby fees that are required with new subdivisions to be reserved for Heritage Ranch to be used at the ranch. To allow alternatives to expanding the marina, which is a required requirement. Allow detached dwellings in residential multifamily zoning, and allow a public golf course in residential suburban, and as well to allow a golf course in the open space category. The major issues with the request include, overall, consistency with county general plan policies, consistency with the planned character of Heritage Ranch and surrounding land uses, necessity for additional residential inventory of land in Heritage Ranch, and a need to address the phasing plan and other associated policies that are in effect at this time. The options for your board are to not authorize the request or authorize one or more of the applicant's requests as shown on the slide, or to authorize all of them to go forward for processing. Staff recommends that your board authorize processing of all of the proposed amendments for further consideration with the phasing plan and other associated issues. That concludes my report. If you have questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
With the exception of about 3 years ago, we have not changed the area plan since about 1980.
I think you're correct. 70s. I don't think we've updated the
master plan. The master plan was in the 70s. We haven't updated this area at all.
I would say that there was another developer application in the 80s to do the phasing plan and have that brought into the Nacimiento area plan standards.
Yeah.
But there haven't been.
But that was prior to the bankruptcy then.
That was in 1986, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I just want to relate the history on this thing because there's been considerable change, or there's potential change. In fact, this was designed originally as a recreational area, secondary units living, and now it's becoming a permanent base. So there is some different change in demand on it. And the only thing that I recall that we did in the last few years is we changed the public facilities and commercial piece that's out on G14. That was actually a general plan change.
Okay.
Is there any other questions then? We have no questions this time. What I'll do is I'll go to the applicant. And if you would make your presentation, give us your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Watson here on behalf of the owners of the property, Mr. and Mrs. King, or King Ventures as we refer to them. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Lopes, for your presentation. With respect to the applications that's before you, as I think most of you know, when King Ventures acquired the property a little more than 2 years ago now, we have been working on a variety of subdivisions that had been approved and in the process of moving forward with building those projects. But there are several thousand acres of property that we acquired that had a multitude of different zonings and various histories on the property, some of which had been abandoned over the years. For example, a large RV subdivision that had been approved but had expired and nobody seemed to be too enthusiastic about. So one of the applications to change from recreation zoning where that RV subdivision was approved to a more residential suburban designation is one of those three land use amendments that we've proposed. All of the changes that we have created at this point and presented to you have been generated really as a result of almost a 10-month process that we initiated when we first acquired the property with the Heritage Ranch Owners Association. At our suggestion, a planning committee was created, and we had a series of meetings over that 10-month period, which resulted in many, not all, but many areas of agreement. And many of those areas are listed in the documents and in the submittal that we made to you today. There are areas of disagreement. And with all due respect to the association and our points of view, we thought that the most appropriate way in which to proceed was to take essentially a 30-year-old master plan and bring it before the county through its update process. So the applications that we presented have been our effort at initiating some dialogue as to what modifications, fine-tuning, and changes should be made to the plan to allow the ranch to build out in an appropriate way. There have been a couple of series of pinpointed amendments over the last few years, but for the most part, we're really talking about plans and decision-making that were made more than 30 years ago. So it was our feeling that the most appropriate way to look at the build-out of the ranch was to prepare a comprehensive series of amendments, present them, and allow the public process to work its course. That's the purpose for today's request, is to get your authorization to begin that planning process. With that, I'd be happy to answer any specific questions that come up from you, from members of the public, but as you can imagine, it takes a long time to get through the amendment cycle, and for that, there'll be plenty of public opportunities and testimony to go over. So thank you for your consideration.
Good. Any questions? Seeing none, then we will go to the public. Again, I'd ask that you present a request to speak form. Remind you that you have 3 minutes to present on the subject. First person to speak I have is John Linford, followed by Linda Ritchie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the
board. You can pull that mic up all the way. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the board, for the opportunity to address you today with comments with respect to this application. My name is John Linford. My address is 4800 Eastern Drive, Bakersfield, California, and I am an attorney for the Heritage Ranch Owners Association. I'm not going to spend a great deal of time. I'm going to be very brief. I think the association has done a very remarkable job in summarizing and detailing the issues and concerns that it has with respect to the proposed general plan and land use element amendments set forth in the letter that I believe is attached as Exhibit D to the applicant's package, and also is supplemented by a letter from the association's other attorney, John Johnson. I just would like to briefly highlight for you the major concerns the association has, and those fall into three main categories. And the first, and probably the paramount concern the association has, is the preservation of the open space within the Heritage Ranch community. The association at this point in time believes there is already a deficiency of approximately 14 to 15 acres of open space in the community. And this amendment proposes the conversion of additional open space to recreation and residential uses. The second major category of concern the association has is with respect to a proposed public golf course and the necessary public streets and roads that would be required to service that golf course to provide traffic circulation. And of course, Heritage Ranch for over 30 years has been a private gated community, and the installation or construction of public thoroughfares through it would completely destroy the fabric and general plan of the community. Last major category is the association is concerned with the preservation and the integrity of its master declaration of CC&Rs. There are some proposed amendments in the applicant's package that would essentially strip the association of its authority under the CC&Rs to offer architectural review and approval as provided in that master declaration. And that summarizes our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. With that, then, Linda Ritchie, followed by Jimmy King.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm the general manager at Heritage Ranch. And Heritage Ranch has been around for over 30 years, and it's been controlled by a couple different developers for much of that time, and as a result, we have found a lot of inconsistencies in documents and various things that have been allowed. And specifically, I just want to address the deficiency in open space. We were recently provided a copy of the open space inventory, which was done in 1995, and at the end of that open space inventory is 174 acres of what's called a scenic setback buffer representing the 20-acre parcels. The 20-acre parcels were annexed into Heritage Ranch in 1973, and basically the owners of those properties, it's private property, and it abuts G14. And another tract, which is 1063, was annexed into the ranch in August of 1986, and it's the same thing, and they're 5 to 8 acre size parcels. It's across the road, and the private property owners owns all the way up to the highway. The month after that tract was annexed, there was an ordinance 2270, which was amended on September 2nd of 1986, and it used to say provide a minimum setback of 500 feet from the center line of Lake Nacimiento Drive, and the words open space was inserted in the middle of that. And I think the intention was to have future developments that were on the highway, that they had a scenic an open space buffer. And in the new tracks, 1910 and 1990, that's exactly what happened. And that open space would, in essence, belong to the association, not private property. Well, when the inventory was done, starting in 89 and then 95, they got creative and they added the private property owned by those other two tracks back into the open space mix, which represents over 200 acres of property that's not open space or available for use to the membership. So there's other deficiencies we have noted as well, but just using that alone, developing the tentative tracks that are in place, which is 1990 at this point, we believe we're already 14 acres short at a very minimum for future development. So the concern is, if we allow this process to go through, would it serve anyone's interest if there really isn't future land available that should be able to be developed? Thank you.
Thank you. Jimmy King, followed by Gordon Laughlin.
Good afternoon. My name is Jimmy King, and I'm a property owner at Heritage Ranch, and I am also the AEC planner for the Heritage Ranch Owners Association. I'm here to read a letter in behalf of a property owner that could not be here today. The letter is addressed to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors from Robert and Darla Stevenson, 9918 Sunfish Circle, Lot 108, Track 1910 in Heritage Ranch. The date is June the 4th, 2004. The subject, G-03-0010-King Ventures. I would like to express my concern in regards to the proposed general plan, land use ordinance, and land use element amendment application by King Ventures. My wife and I purchased Lot 108 of Track 1910 last year with the full intent of building a home for the two of us and our three daughters. We have long enjoyed coming to Lake Nacimiento and enjoying all that is offered by the natural resources. We purchased our lot from King Ventures with the understanding that we would be part of Heritage Ranch and would have full access to all the amenities that are part of the ranch, which offers a wonderful abundance of open space for hiking, riding a mountain bike, as well as horseback riding. We are now very concerned and fully opposed to the possibility that this may change through the proposed amendment brought by King Ventures. We are concerned that we may have possibly made a mistake in purchasing this property if the changes do occur. We cannot now just resell our property as we have begun construction on our new home. Had we known of the possibility of these proposed changes, we probably would not have purchased our lot. I feel in a sense that we may have been misled into purchasing our lot by not having this information presented to us. This type of planning does not happen overnight, so I do feel that this future plan was well withheld from us. Thank you for your attention to this issue. Regards, Robert Stevenson, Lot 108, Track 1910 of Heritage Ranch. And if I may, I'd like to have this made part of the record.
Mr. Canadier, that would make it part of the record. Thank you, sir. Gordon Laughlin.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the board, I'm going to be very brief. I find myself on the other side of an issue with Mr. Dave Watson. I found him to be a reasonable man and an honorable man. I don't feel comfortable, but I was left an old L.A. trial lawyer, and I represent this 20-acre people. There's about seven of us, and we're uncomfortable about one issue. It's common sense. I think if somebody came to your house and said, hey, we want to use your front yard for open space because we're going to build something over here. You pay for your taxes on your yard. It's your yard. I think you'd be shocked. The 20-acre people do not want their 20 acres, their front yard that they pay taxes for, that they own, to be considered open space and grabbed by somebody else. If they're going to develop and they're going to have open space to do it, they're going to have to work it around, that's fine. But we don't feel that it's reasonable, we don't feel that it's common sense, and we don't feel that it's germane for our open space to be taken for this purpose. I've been at Heritage since 1973. I've got a 20-acre parcel there. I know how the 20-acre people feel. We're not overly agitated about things because we're on the outside anyway. But we are happy to have our open space. It's ours. We don't want to give it away. We don't have anybody take it. And I don't think there's any law on this because nobody's ever really had the whatever it takes to come in and take somebody's open space. So we don't want it to happen here, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wish to speak on this subject that did not put in a form? Seeing none coming forward, then we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and bring it back to board. Does anybody have any questions? She said, get to lead this thing, Mr. Ryan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll ask staff on the last speaker the question of open space. Is this a precedent we're looking at here?
I think that could, well, I think that that can be addressed with the application.
Yeah.
It's an issue that is raised by the proposal to be able to use open space areas for structures that aren't currently allowed by area plan standard.
I think there's one question that's raised. I think Ms. Ritchie made the statement that in the 80s or so when the ordinance came up and set the 500-foot setback, she had also said previous to that that the 20-acre piece is owned all the way to the road. And now there's this discussion, is that 20 the acre piece is the 500 feet included in their site or that? So, and I think you just brought it forth, Mr. Laughlin, that it has become an issue, is what is open space, what isn't. And my reaction to this thing is I've been watching this go through the process over the last number of years. And the general, I think the words, and I think Ms. Ritchie stated it, there's inconsistencies, there's deficiencies. There's matters of interpretation that have gotten lost over the 30 years. There has been change in the intent of the properties out there to permanent residencies. Many of these questions need to be answered, and I think the appropriate mechanism to do that is to basically take all these and put them into the public hearing process, which is what we call an amendment process. I do have one question before I make that motion. When we begin this process, does this open other areas to be investigated specifically within the Heritage Ranch area, or are we going to stay specifically to these units?
Cami Griffin, County Planning staff, we would look at only this application unless your board, as part of their authorization today, asked staff to broaden the review. Otherwise, we would only evaluate what is being requested by this particular applicant.
Because I know there were some suggestions and some of this information that's here and some I've seen before. I think the one was the equestrian arena area. There's all kinds of things. Since this thing started, the school property has been actually moved. There's all kinds of issues. So I didn't know how much this tends to open it up. And so you're saying as the request here is pretty much where we'll stay.
Unless your board directs us otherwise.
Yeah. Mr. Ryan.
What are you referring to as opening up to the old community of Heritage Ranch?
Or well,
what would you look at as an opening it up of an area?
I some of it just happens to be my own experience, but I know the boat storage area that's up that they're talking about changing to residential single family. There's been controversy in there considering about whether to leave that storage, whether to actually put it into the CSD, and so there's going to bring a lot of things to point as we go through this thing. And my suggestion is I think we need to somewhat see how it relates to the whole picture without getting into the specific details. The issue with the arenas and the equestrian, whether it's even going to stay where it's at or get moved, I don't know. Because that's even been brought up over time. And it's not part of what's been presented here. It's just as I've seen things happen out there, people I've talked with, and the marina issue is again, part of what we're talking about. So
would you expand it to take in the existing community of Heritage and Ranch plus the development that's being proposed?
The recommendation, I think, by staff in looking at those specific areas, zoning change and planning area standards is going to include an awful lot of the Heritage Ranch. So the motion would be to follow staff's recommendation to go ahead and look at the total picture of the I think you referred to it as there was
that's not
five.
What Cami said though. Cami said she's gonna look at just the this specific development.
True. But I think what's going to happen is as you look at it, let's just take, for example, you have two areas that are coming out of open space. There's a relationship as to what that is going to do to keep within the old general plan or in terms of total open space. Are the new units going to stay within what the plan said at 2,900 units or that? I'm saying that the history of this thing is going to encompass a lot that needs to be looked at, but not necessarily change the plan.
Yeah.
Am I confusing it?
My question is, it should, because staff said they're going to look at exactly what's being proposed here. Should you not include the existing community of Heritage Ranch, because if there's things that have to interact between the two of these, they should both be open and be able to be modified and looked at.
Yeah.
Right. If something that's as part of this request is going to, like if we're using an example of the open space, obviously we're going to have to look at the open space on a village-wide viewpoint. So there are things that are proposed here that are going to trigger other looking at, but we're not opening up the whole
thing. It's not de novo. It's not opening up the whole thing, but there is some related
issues. This applicant, it's on his dime, so to speak.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Lopes again. Then if you're in considering a motion, looking at the slide before you, we brought up the terms associated issues, and we probably could clarify associated issues related to the applicant's request.
That would be good, because they do have this Doppler effect. They're gonna move out, and I don't know how far out it would go, but okay. So
moved.
Okay, second. Moved by Mr. Ryan, seconded by Mr. Sajjan. That will authorize planning according to staff's recommendation is listed up there with the changes Mr. Lopes noted. Any other questions? Seeing none, I think
that the beauty of the authorization is to take all the neighbors' concern and address them at that time publicly and see where we stand.
Yeah, it's going to go through a considerable. Well, there's actually two major public hearings. One would be before the Planning Commission and one before there, but there's a lot of process before that time.
Well, and just looking at the staff report and the work that's already gone out there, there's been an awful lot of work that's gone on, and you're looking at the disagreements that the Heritage Ranch Owners Association, whatever, has. So they've already been working through this, and this just starts the step to actually go into more work to the final product of the end.
Yeah, I know a major one that's been a problem is just the roads themselves. Whether you make them an offer dedication, there's a potential later on that even Heritage Ranch Homeowners Center goes belly up and all the roads come back to the county. We don't know. So this will go through the process. We have a motion and a second on the floor. I have no other discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Thank you very, very much. With that, then, we'll go to item E1.
Item E1 is a request to approve a plan for the use of the former General Hospital campus and to approve 3 leases and 1 sublease with the Community Health Centers of the Central Coast, CHC, to provide medical services in county-owned and leased space in San Luis Obispo and Atascadero.
We'll go to Dan here as he's furiously trying to get his sign up there. Dan?
Good afternoon. I'm Dan Buckshy from the Administrative Office. I am here to review a proposal for the use of the former General Hospital building and campus. And what I have planned is a brief presentation, and then I'll attempt to answer any questions you might have at that point. But I'd start with some background information. On December 16th of 2003, the board approved a capital project to install infrastructure upgrades at the hospital campus. Budget adjustments totaling $4.4 million were approved to fund the capital project. In addition, staff was directed to investigate the sale of a parcel of land at the health campus in order to offset the project costs. And lastly, staff was directed to prepare a report outlining the costs and time frame for relocating as many county-related health services as possible into the facility, and this last point on the slide is what I'll be focusing on today. A bit more background information. On March 16th of this year, the board approved contracts with CHC to expand outpatient and primary care medical services, and since December 16th of 2003, county staff has held discussions with Santa Barbara County and Marion Medical regarding a jointly funded and operated psychiatric hospital that could potentially be located at the annex facility at the health campus. As for our proposal to your board today, we propose to continue the lease with Senior Nutrition for the kitchen and dining area at the main hospital as was approved by the board in February of this year. The proposal also includes leasing 8,300 square feet of the first floor of the main hospital building to CHC for pharmacy, radiology, and cardiopulmonary services. In addition, they will be using some of the space for administrative activities. And approximately 4,600 square feet of the annex building would be leased to CHC for women's health services, which includes breastfeeding. And it has been discussed with CHC, the potential psychiatric hospital at the annex, and should that program come to fruition, they would find an alternative site for the women's health program. The remaining space at the hospital and hospital campus is proposed to be utilized by county departments. The remaining space at the annex would continue to house SART, administrative operations, and medical records. It is proposed that Drug and Alcohol Services would vacate lease space at McMillan Street in San Luis Obispo and would occupy portions of the first and second floors of the main hospital building. This would result in annual lease payment savings of $110,000. Also proposed that Mental Health Administration would vacate lease space at Pacific Street in San Luis Obispo and would occupy a portion of the second floor of the main hospital building. This would result in an annual savings of $83,000 of lease payments. It is also proposed that the County Medical Services Program would vacate the trailers located on the hospital campus and would move into the first floor of the main hospital building. The existing trailers are quite old and in need of some repairs and upgrades, and as opposed to investing money in the trailers, it's proposed to move staff into the hospital building. Additional mental health administrative staff would vacate the unreinforced masonry adobe at the health campus and move into the second floor of the main hospital building. And as you can see on the slide, approximately 12,500 square feet would be vacant on the second and third floors for future use by county health operations. As is summarized by attachment A in the board packet, which is page E1-7, CHC would lease just under 13,000 square feet of space at the hospital campus. They would lease that space at a market rate of $1.25 per square foot per month, which equates to annual lease payments to the county of about $195,000 per year. Senior Nutrition would make lease payments to the county of $36,000 per year per the lease agreement that currently exists. Those two dollar figures, coupled with the previously mentioned savings at mental health lease space and at the drug and alcohol lease space, equates to an annual lease savings and revenue enhancement to the county of $424,000. This is at the hospital campus. In addition to the space at the hospital campus, it is proposed that the county would lease 7,100 square feet of space at the Atascadero Clinic to CHC in order for them to provide clinic and pharmacy services. Also proposed that CHC would sublease the San Luis Obispo Family Care Clinic that is located on Bishop Street. The sublease would end January 25th of 05, and it is intended that CHC would directly lease the facility from the owner of the building upon the expiration of the sublease. It should be noted that the county would continue to lease the clinical lab space at the Family Care Clinic on Bishop Street. In addition to the space, CHC would lease furniture and equipment at all of the previously mentioned sites. The complete financial summary of the proposal that is before you today, as you can see, the Senior Nutrition, Mental Health, and Drug and Alcohol lease savings and or revenue listed on the slide there. In addition, the total CHC lease revenue is $514,000. That includes the $195,000 at the hospital campus, plus the sublease for the space on Bishop Street, plus the lease space at Atascadero, and includes the furniture and equipment as well. The total projected annual savings or revenue enhancement to the county is approximately $743,000. Staff's recommendation to your board today is to approve the plan for the use of the health campus as summarized in attachment A of the agenda packet and to approve the three leases and one sublease with CHC. Lastly, staff is still investigating options for the potential sale of the parcel of land at the hospital campus, and we'll come back to your board within the next 2 months with various options and recommendations. And that concludes the presentation.
Okay. Board questions? Peg?
Yeah. First of all, when you mentioned, let me go through a couple of these you went through
quickly.
You mentioned that upon a certain event, women's health would be, and you mentioned breastfeeding, related services would be moved out of the facility. Could you just expand why?
Yeah. County staff has had some discussions with Santa Barbara and Marion Medical about potentially having a psychiatric hospital located at the annex building at the hospital campus. That is currently where women's health and breastfeeding is located, along with medical records in the SART program. That program is in its early discussion. Should it come to fruition, the psychiatric hospital, that would be the space that's tentatively planned for that operation. The existing operations would vacate that space then.
What do you think is going to happen to SART and the breastfeeding? Where do you...
Couple options. If mental health were to move out of its existing space and into the annex, coupled with some of the Santa Barbara operations, they could move into the currently where mental health is located at the main hospital building.
All right. So we're not creating a situation where we're just quietly moving somebody out knowingly.
No, we think we can find space for them.
Okay. The second part is you said here the additional mental health administrative staff would vacate the adobe located on the hospital campus. The adobe structure is unreinforced masonry. For mine and maybe other people's edification, where is that?
It is back. Do you have the chart, Nikki, of the layout?
I didn't think there was any reinforced masonry back there.
There is. If you were to look at the hospital building, it is behind it and up on the left.
It looks like the old barn. It looks like
yeah.
A garage is what it is. Yeah.
If we can get the layout here up.
Go buy something a million
times.
He'll look
right out of his office.
Know.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, can we just see that?
It is right here.
Oh.
By reference, here's the main building down here.
Okay. Hearing some old history come through here. The other question I have is you talked about the sublease and taking over. Are we covering all our costs on that sublease then?
Yes.
So we're not – the net gain was truly a net gain. It's not just a
– That is correct.
Side of a balance sheet.
CHC is picking up the entire cost of that lease.
We were okay. All right. Okay. That's it for now.
Good.
Okay.
Mr. Sajjan?
On the subleases, are we named on their insurance?
Good question.
Sorry. On the subleases, are we named on their insurance in case something was to happen on the floor?
Good afternoon, Rita Neal, Deputy County Counsel. A standard insurance requirement on a lease or all subleases is that we're named additional insured.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, it's the opportunity for the public to speak on this item. I have one request to speak form, Reverend C. Height.
I'm Reverend C. Height. I'm not sure that I heard it right. Did we just hear that women with infants are going to be going to a building, formerly General Hospital, that is becoming a mental institution to learn about breastfeeding? I'm not sure that I heard that right. Is CHC getting into the mental health business, or are we just taking over the clinics held by the Family Care Center? You've explained the reason for the risk of the $750,000. Is CHC a business, and was the county paying this federal provider for the community from the community budget so that you can pay the leases on General Hospital? Was this move anticipated? I have concerns about the notification. Specifically, has the county responsibly notified the patients of FCC that the county is transferring the practice to a new health provider? Why does the county continue to make decisions for its public health consumers and disregard choice while limiting options? I'm reading from a 2001 letter signed by Clinic Administrator Jan Hicks, Family Care Center, a department of the County of San Luis Obispo. In the event you wish to transfer out of our practice, we will make your medical records available to you, your new physician, with a medical record release form signed by you. This form will be available at the front desk. Your health care is important to us, and we value you as a patient. At this point, I'm going to recommend that FCC patients don't walk, that they run to the nearest RTA Route 10 to Santa Maria and establish medical care with a county that is not claiming crisis. I had options, according to this letter, in 2001, and this is a clinic that failed to diagnose premature menopause in 1998, fibromyalgia and diverticulitis in 2002. I would recommend that people establish medical care in another county while this is all sorted out, that they just tell their new providers that they're between doctors and that they don't suggest that they're refugees from the privatizing of Slo County. Medical records may be full of malpractice, as expected. When there is a crisis and belligerence in providing services, there is chaos. One option is monopoly. It is not likely CHC, the new health provider, will improve a patient's health services by contradicting county public health while on probation with the county. Quote, Title 27 General Hospital, the intent of this initiative is to establish San Luis Obispo County General Hospital by ordinance to ensure that the people of San Luis Obispo County shall have a right to approve by vote any closure, sale, or lease of the San Luis Obispo General Hospital, hereafter referred to as General Hospital. What is the name and function of the former General Hospital, and who is determining this for the voter? Public health care crisis, human services crisis, affordable and public housing crisis. You make a convincing argument that the county lacks the humanity and managing skills required to protect our health and safety.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wish to speak? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
Staff.
I got a motion. Motion by Assizing, seconded by Ryan. For one thing, for Ms. Height, all the things that you ask about in terms of notification were done through the Beilinson hearings and through public hearings that we had before the board, and it's been over the last few years that this has been going through.
Before we take a final vote, I'd just like to ask Gail, we had so many people with interest in what happened to General. Have they been aware of what this recommendation is? I mean, I'm seeing some of them were taken care of, SART and breastfeeding, but we did have some others. So were there, what, could you just fill in that blank so we don't leave this wondering if there's still people out there who...
But just as a follow-up to what Supervisor Ova just said, yeah, we did do lots of notification through the Beilinson, but we're also going to send out now that, as of yesterday, I sent you the email saying CHC has the licenses, so each patient will be getting notification also as a follow-up to that. And so, I'm sorry, could you just repeat the question? Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Your train of thought went off its track?
Yes, I was on the side. About other people who are interested. Dan has been the central point of contact, and Ed, throughout this whole process, we've had various people call me or Dan saying, hey, we'd be interested in using the facility for this, that, or the other thing. And then I always point them in his direction, and he says, this is what we're looking at. If you have an interest, please submit a proposal. And then he's been routinely communicating back to them with what the status of the project is. Yes.
Can I ask then, what is the final of the birthing center that was so much talked about? What happened?
Not heard from them since the December 16th hearing. We'd had some discussions with them that we would be looking at the space of charging the fair market rate of $1.25 per square foot, and I don't believe that fit within their operating budget, and they've not been interested in the space since that time.
Also, I'll add on the 16th, when your board looked at it, you might recall that one of the recommendations or one of the directions to staff was to move ahead with this idea that the facility would principally be dedicated to county health operations, and so that's the direction that staff took. outside the discussions with CHC is to try to get as many county health operations in there so that we could abandon some lease payments that we're making in other facilities.
And with that, I'm really kind of glad that you ended on that, because when we talk about what that area is used for, it is part of a cooperative agreement, if you will, between the city, the county, and all the residents, that it be a health center area. And you know, I know you're talking about what to do with the back parcel, and it should be, in my estimation, in accordance with these same type principles. And I know it's under discussion, and I'd just like to throw that out there, because I think that the ability to get people to and from medical services, and they can go from one thing they need to another thing they need, the radiologist to a doctor to lab or whatever, is really important. And if we start sending people all over again, I think we'll be taking a step backwards. This is an opportunity to take a step forward in making that truly a tripolar type accessible area. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. No other discussion. We have a motion on the floor. Roll call, please.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Obit?
Aye. That concludes the board's meeting today. We adjourn to Monday the 13th, 9 o'clock.
That's right.
And we will be dealing with the board's budget. Sherry. Sure.